Good morning. It's 9 a.m. This meeting is called to order for the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Can we get a roll call, please?
Dr. Garino.
Present.
Dr. Ganong. Dr. Bennett.
Present.
Ms. Powell.
Present.
Okay, I'd like to address
Dr. Ganong is absent.
Correct. I'd like to address our newly licensed chiropractors in the state. Welcome. You're required to come to a meeting in the first year of your newly licensed status, so thanks for coming today. You'll learn some new things, I promise. We're going to go to our tab number one, which is a matter of Dr. Stephen Brown. Dr. Kolash?
Dr. Brown is present with the representation, and the complaint is also signed in. Allegations include improper billing and unprofessional conduct.
Hi, please introduce yourselves for the record. We'll start over here.
Douglas Knoll.
Good morning, Andy Cargas of Woodruff Smith, appearing with and on behalf of Dr. Brown.
Okay, just a reminder, just to protect the complaint and confidentiality, we're going to use initials only. So first and last initial. Thank you. Okay. And go ahead and give us a board briefing, please.
Okay. Allegations include improper billing and unprofessional conduct.
Okay. Ms. Carvis?
Thank you, Dr. Moreno, members of the board. I know you've read the material, so I'll just keep my comments very brief. We contend that this is a fee dispute, which is obviously something that the board does not consider. And a massage appointment was made by an ME for herself and DK. She was informed at the time that those appointments were scheduled that there would be a missed appointment fee or if they no-showed for those appointments. That is what occurred. When they did not appear, bills were sent because the credit card on file could not be billed. So both patients were sent an invoice for $60. $30 for a missed appointment and $30 for an invalid credit card fee. DK called and said that he never made the appointment and he should not have to pay the bill. The matter was turned over to collections, and DK also filed a complaint with the Better Business Bureau after Dr. Brown and his staff had the opportunity to speak with the collection agency regarding the nature of the debt. They were told that that was not something that could be pursued against DK, so they withdrew collection proceedings. The collection company also confirmed that there was no credit, that there was no credit bureau reporting, so there was no impact to DK. DK also indicated on the Better Business Bureau complaint that he would consider this complaint and matter closed with the Better Business Bureau. Again, we believe that this is a fee dispute and not something that the board should consider, and would ask that it be dismissed with no basis to proceed against Dr. Brown.
Okay, we have, in fact, read all the board meeting materials. At this point, I'd like to give DK a chance to make a brief statement if you have any additional information for us, or if there's anything you'd like to tell us at this point.
Yes, I'd just like to review the scenario, if I may.
Certainly.
On 12/12, I received a bill from the chiropractic center, and I called and I expressed to them that I didn't make an appointment. They said, yes, you did. I said, I don't know you. I didn't make an appointment. They said, well, your girlfriend made it. I said, I don't have a girlfriend. They said, well, ME made this appointment. I said, that was a tenant in one of my properties. And I'm not aware of any appointment. And then she stated, well, you need to pay it. And I said, well, I didn't make it, and according to the Fair Credit Report Act, I don't have to pay it. And I said, let me give you a scenario. So if I made 10 doctor's appointments for you and you got bills, do you think you should have to pay them all? Well, I don't care about that. You're just going to pay it, or we're going to turn it to collection. I said, well, good luck. Then, literally, 10 days later, I received a collection letter. Now it's $90. And I called the collection agency, gave them the same story. Well, we need to have your Social Security number and date of birth. And I said, listen, you're not going to make a file on me. the chiropractor doesn't have that information. I'm not going to give it to you. And they said, well, we're directed to collect this, and if you don't pay it, we're going to turn it into your credit bureau. So at that point, I contacted my attorney, and they wrote a letter stating where they could not do that according to the law. And so finally, at that point, the chiropractic center then waived the charge. But again, my point here is that, you know, from an operational standpoint, I think it's just bad business practice for $30 to put all of us through all this. And probably if records were indicated, it's probably not the first time or the last time that this chiropractic center performed these type of acts.
Thank you. Thank you for your opening statement. While it is true that we do not get involved in fee dispute arguments, there are cases where there are unprofessional boundaries that are crossed, and we're here to sift through some of that as well. And so I'm going to ask my board members if they have any questions for the doctor about his procedures in the office or any more details that are needed at this point. And then I'm going to remind my board members to please introduce yourself for the record, for the recorded record.
I have some questions, Mr. Chair. Okay. Angela Powell.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to attempt to turn it on. There we go. Thank you. Angela Powell. I have a question for you. Do you know your tenant? Why should we make an appointment for you?
Yes. No, I know her, but I have no
relationship.
No relationship with her. And no knowledge of any appointment that was ever made.
You never discussed it with her?
No, she actually left prior to this appointment, moved to Florida, and I've had no communication with her.
That seems so odd. Okay. And one for you, Doctor. Do you make it a practice to turn patients over for collection if they don't pay their bill?
Yes.
Any limit on that amount? And
no.
How do you ascertain whether to turn them over for collection or not?
If we made good faith efforts to collect, usually three times or minimal.
So you mean three good faith efforts?
Not in this case, no.
And why?
Because it was just a very blatant case for someone who used today.
You never asked him about or questioned the fact that someone may have made these appointments for him, or that didn't occur to you that maybe he's not really responsible for the bill?
Well, my staff told me that they made an appointment, and he called to make these appointments, and he supplied us with all of his information, his date of birth, his address, his name, and also they could hear in the background agreeing to the appointment. So that's where we made the appointment. But now our policy now is we have to speak directly to the person on the phone to make that appointment because of this.
Glad to hear that. Thank you.
Dr. Bennett?
Yes, Dr. Wayne Bennett. Dr. Brown, a couple of housekeeping details. In your clinic, the delivery of the massage is delivered as part of your clinic offerings, is that correct?
Yes.
And the person or persons who deliver those services, are they licensed massage therapists? Are they chiropractic assistants? Are they both? What are the credentials?
They are licensed massage therapists with the state, and they are registered chiropractic assistants with this board.
Okay, good. Also, I noticed that you have the CICE certification on your letterhead.
Yes.
Can you describe what that certification is, when you were certified, and what you do in that capacity?
That's a certified independent chiropractic examiner certification. It's through the American Board of Independent Medical Examiners, and it certifies me to more certification experience in file review, testifying, and chiropractic expert witness situations.
And you were certified when?
2017.
And how much of that work do you do in your practice?
I don't do any IME work. I do a lot of chiropractic malpractice expert witness work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I have no further questions.
Okay. And so to reiterate, you know, we're here for what seems to be a collection effort on somebody who was not a first point of contact in your office, and you're saying you do not send people to collections for those reasons anymore, or how would you handle this in the future?
The issue we had with this particular case was apparently ME called and made an appointment for her and for him. And we could hear him in the background agreeing to the appointments on the phone, but he did not get on the phone specifically and confirm the appointment and give us his name and his date of birth and his address. Our policy now is we have to speak directly to the person making the appointment. No one else can schedule for anyone else, not even a wife or a husband or a mom or a child. We have to speak right to that person.
And so did you send ME to collections and hold her accountable for these appointments?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Okay, any further questions, board members? Okay, does anybody want to make a motion to dismiss or otherwise?
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter of concern.
And for what purpose?
So that he does follow through on the change in office policy or protocol when handling patients that make appointments, any appointments really. That it's confirmed that the patient in fact made the appointment and not holding anyone but that person accountable.
So I think if we're going to do an undisciplinary advisory letter, it's going to have to be for a violation of a statute or something a little more specific that would relate to
unprofessional.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if I may, just for advisory letters, there's three grounds. Either there's insufficient evidence to support disciplinary action. There's a minor technical violation that isn't sufficient to merit disciplinary action, or there's a minor technical violation and the licensee has demonstrated substantial compliance to rehabilitation or remediation, but the board believes that if the conduct continues, then disciplinary action could occur. So
it would appear the latter, if you're right.
What would the minor technical violation be?
That's right. Okay.
As it relates to your statute.
Okay, so let's go back to the first option.
Okay.
Could you read that to me one more time?
Yes. A non-disciplinary letter to notify a licensee that either, A, while there is insufficient evidence to support disciplinary action, the board believes that continuation of the activities may result in further board action against the licensee.
That would be the one I choose, the first one. And do I need to restate that?
We just need to be clear so staff knows what they're putting in their advisory letter.
Yes, restate your motion, please.
In a rule book.
It's paste, like right in the definitions.
Okay, so we don't have a basis to hear fee disputes, and so this needs to be specific to something statutorily related. So you need to be pretty clear with.
My concern is that the office policies, there needs to be compliance, either a compliance plan in place, something that addresses the problem, which is that the office had no procedure for monitoring who's actually, or for taking action against someone who's made an appointment for someone that they shouldn't have. We need to have accountability.
Is that a requirement in your statute?
To be accountable?
Well, to the board, too.
May I state something?
No, at the moment we're deliberating on what kind of action we're going to take. All right, so billing somebody who did not have a service provided and sending them to collections under the grounds of unprofessional conduct could be considered a non-disciplinary advisory letter of concern.
That's exactly what I mean. Which I stated initially, unprofessional conduct. That would be the advisory letter.
And for that, for a minor infraction that has been remediated?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were going under the insufficient evidence.
Insufficient evidence.
Okay.
Yes, please.
So you don't think there's sufficient evidence to support the violation, or do you think a violation occurred? A minor type?
I think a minor violation occurred.
And the licensee has demonstrated compliance
and a state of remedial action to correct the problem.
Okay, so we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any further deliberation on this matter? Okay, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it, and we're done for today. Thank you for coming, for your testimony today, and if you have any further questions, you can contact staff on another day.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go on to tab number two now, in the matter of Dr. Christian Wong. Good morning.
Good morning.
Do we have anybody signed in on the complainant side?
Dr. Wong has signed in and is representation of Glenn Carey.
Okay. Please introduce yourselves for the record.
Mr. President, members of the board, Glenn Carey, legal representation for Dr. Wong. Member of the board, Dr. Christian Wong.
Hi, thanks for joining. And Dr. Kolash, can you give us a board briefing, please?
Allegations can include use of drugs or alcohol and unprofessional conduct.
Okay. And I'm sorry, your name again for counsel?
Flynn Carey.
Okay. Mr. Carey, go ahead if you have an opening statement for us. I assure you we've read all the information in front of us.
Thank you, Dr. Guarino. Just as a point of order, I do have, in response to the subpoena that was requested, court records and police reports, if the board was so inclined to review. We just wanted to note our compliance with the subpoena. I'm focused on this case, obviously, on the remedial nature of what Dr. Wong has done, the fact that he did self-report this pursuant to 32-3208. That's how the board became on notice of this matter. He did so within the 10 working days required. His blood alcohol level at the scene was a 0.84, which is just above the legal limit, and his blood alcohol concentration when it was tested later at the station was a 0.94. It's over the legal limit, but the way this case was resolved is with what's called an impaired to the slightest degree DUI. I know that in any drug or alcohol case, you're looking at a variety of factors, but also the habitual use subsection that sometimes the board will use in cases where alcohol intersects with patient care. This is not that case. There's no evidence that he has consumed alcohol at any point while providing patient care, and this was not an instance where he was coming to or from any kind of appointment related to his profession. I would note this is his first DUI. It was reported timely, and he provided all materials to the board as requested. Finally, the convictions case has been set aside pursuant to 13905. He did that because he wanted to send the message that he took this very seriously. That is in the discretion of the court. And as a criminal practitioner, it does get denied. The court in this case did grant that set aside. And so he has a designation on his record that while he was convicted, the matter was later set aside and he was released from all penalties of that DUI. I would ask the board to consider this for some form of non-disciplinary agreement, such as a letter of advisory letter of concern, on the basis that if you do find a violation, he has shown a pattern of significant remediation. Thank you.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Wong?
I don't, Mr. Chair.
Yes, just one, Dr. Wong. I'm Dr. Wayne Bennett. Did you, in reading through the records, it appeared to me that you failed to report this, you did self-report, but you failed to do so within 10 days. Is that correct or not?
I don't believe it's correct because it's 10 working days, from what I understand.
Okay, I'm just trying to clarify this.
May I, Dr. Bennett?
Sure, of course.
The 32-3208 is within 10 days of charges. He was physically hands-on arrested on December 26th. The 10 working days, you have to remove the day of the arrest under the normal administrative code. You don't count the day of the event. The 10 days are working days. The board was closed on the 1st due to a state holiday. His 10th day would actually be, I believe, January 10th. And in addition, the actual charge date of the charge was actually later the week after. What happens is a physical hand-on arrest will occur with someone, but it is up to the prosecutor to perfect that into a charge under Arizona law. You don't have an officer who can do a hands-on arrest and turn it into a court case without the participation of a prosecutor. If we use the charge date, he was reporting around day 4 or 5, And if we use the physical hands-on arrest date for simplicity, he's still actually within the 10 days.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Ms. Williams, just for verification purposes, that's correct?
Yes, I calculated it the same way Mr. Harry did.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So, you know, part of our task is to ensure public safety and make sure that any kind of alcohol or drug problem doesn't end up, you know, affecting patient care. In the past, you know, we've had doctors put on probation and sometimes go to addictionologists and ensure us, you know, that there are no other problems for us to worry about. So we need to deliberate at this point what we want to do in this matter. And so I'm going to ask my board members if they have any comments or further concerns at this point.
I would need to, Mr. Chair,
yes.
I need to ask a question about the non-disciplinary advisory letter for a clear violation.
Okay.
There exists a clear violation, except that it was dismissed, so there is no violation, correct?
Are you talking about the conviction?
Yes.
Yes. So the advisory letter for a clear violation, it's really a minor technical. The statute doesn't use the term clear violation.
Okay.
It says minor technical violation. Under your statutes, in order to discipline somebody for a conviction, it has to be a felony or a misdemeanor involving moral turpitude. And a DUI is not a misdemeanor involving moral turpitude.
Okay.
So you have to go under it would be a minor violation of a different statute, perhaps, but not that one.
Which I don't see, so.
I'm gonna make a motion that we enter a new executive session
for legal counsel.
Okay, there's a second. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, we're going to leave the room. You guys can stay here. We'll be back in just a few moments after we get legal counsel.
Did I hear another person sign on to the telephone call?
This is Jennifer from Hank Clifton Eck on the Dr. Deanna Bolton case.
Okay, thank you. If you keep yourself muted as you have, and we'll let you know when it's time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the time is 9:32. We're back in regular session. Thanks for your patience. So first I'll ask, again, if board members have any questions for the doctor. I guess one that I have is just, how do we know this isn't going to happen again? And I think you're sincere, and I know you've taken steps to remediate, and you've been through a lot through this, so I want to hear it in your own words.
Members of the board, I want to humbly apologize for my actions regarding the night of December 26, 2018. I was out with friends that evening after the Christmas holiday. Normally, I would arrange for a ride or take an Uber that night. I feel it's my duty to make good choices, and I'll let my rest. I am thankful that my conduct did not hurt others, but recognize this is not an example that I should be setting as a professional. I am deeply embarrassed by my behaviors. I have had a lot of time to consider what had happened and reflect on my actions. I promise that I will make better choices in the future. I know I have to earn back your trust as a board, and I appreciate your opportunity to talk with you today. I'm truly sorry for my mistake, and I promise it will not happen again.
Okay, thank you. And board members, what's your pleasure?
I'd like to make a motion, Mr. Chair, that we issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter for a minor or technical violation, and that violation would be potential threat to public safety.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it. Thank you, and that concludes our matter today.
Thank you, board members.
Thank you. Okay, case number 3 is next on our list with the matter of Dr. Jessica Hogg. Hi.
Dr. Jessica Hogg has signed in, and the complainant, DH, has signed in.
Okay. Okay, so as a reminder to protect the complainant's identity, we're just going to use initials today, so can you please introduce your initials?
DH.
Thank you. And Doctor, will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, good morning. My name is Dr. Jessica Hogg.
Okay, Hogg, thank you. Dr. Kolesch, do you have a board briefing for us?
Allegations include breach of patient confidentiality and unprofessional conduct.
Okay, thank you, and I assure you we've read all the board meeting materials. Doctor, do you have anything you'd like to say at this point?
Yes, so Geico had given me a printout. We didn't take their patient, and on the bottom it gave me access or notified me that I can track medical claims by enrolling and proving them a provider, which is what I did. We put in patient information, name, date of birth, etc., and claims associated with car accident cases off date. I don't think I did anything unprofessional or in a breach of confidentiality with speaking with the attorney. Or contacting Geico, because Geico is the one that provided the information to me.
So did you, in your opinion, make any breach of your authority? Did you sign in under your own
Correct.
Provider number getting Correct. This information, or
Absolutely
did you put in information that should not have been privy to you?
I put a name, date of birth, last 4 social, claim number, and it came up, as it does with anybody who has Geico for their insurance purposes or car accident cases.
Okay, and DH, what do you say to this?
The Geico website specifies that also my complaint was direct quote from the website says anyone 18 and over who is identified on a claim as a vehicle or property owner, driver, or passenger, that is specified who is supposed to access the information. I spoke to my attorney and stated in the letter, and I spoke to the GACO representatives as well, and they both told me that the doctor does not have access or authority to access the information. Could access through medical stuff, but she did not have authority to accessing details of the claim as far as paid out on a other areas, personal property and damage and things like that. That was not supposed to be available to her. And that was pretty much stated in my letter.
Okay, thank you. Board members, do you have any questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have questions.
Okay, Ms. Powell.
Angela Powell. You, doctor, had said you would reduce your bill and then subsequently changed your mind. Why would you even talk? You said you didn't. You would never compromise your bill. You never reduce in the rate plan. And the patient accepted that, right?
Correct.
And then you said you went away and came back and thought about it some more and decided, yeah, you know, I was being unreasonable.
Sure.
I think I should consider this reduction.
Huh?
Why?
There was a law that was being passed, I believe Aprilish last year, that did not allow providers, not just chiropractors, to balance bill. Per my individual that does my liens, it is by law that I'm supposed to submit to health insurance, and then whatever wasn't covered by your health insurance would roll over to a car accident case. That is what had happened for many years, and then when this law passed, it was in a big gray area. So when I'm talking with my attorney, who I deal with personal injury cases, he suggested that this might be a reduction that I consider, given this new legislation where they weren't quite sure how to interpret it yet, because it was still so new. The particular case was previously done. I was discharged in October of 2017, so this new law was being passed months and months later. When I had reached out to the attorney under the instruction of my attorney, there is a safekeeping law that when you ask for a full accounting, that if they know this information, they're supposed to provide it. I never received any more notification or any response from the attorney, and 13 days later, I get a check for payment in full. So I wasn't given the opportunity to see if everyone else was cooperating and to what degree so that I could follow suit.
And here's the problem I have with that. You agreed with the patient to certain terms, and then when you realize that obviously he was getting more money than you thought, this is what it seems like, you went, wait a minute, I deserve to be paid my whole sum of money, which you deserve to be paid from the start, okay? But to go back then and make that statement, it's like, well, just because I got a big settlement, doctor, how does that affect my fees to you? It shouldn't have, and you made an issue of it. It's not the HIPAA violation, but the personal violation that he's feeling, and I understand that. I would suggest respectfully that you have very clear understandings with your patients and not go back on your word, and that's what it seems like. It's, in my opinion, GEICO's fault for allowing, you know, putting your social security number on a fax transmission in the first place. But doctor, without that, you wouldn't have been able to access. And so I would say your records don't have his social security number, is that right?
No, it does.
It does, okay. So you have been given, you did give her your social security number, which, and I would caution you in the future, doctors don't need either. It's not a, social security numbers are not something you want to circulate if that's the only way you could access it, if you didn't have that. It's not that HIPAA violation. It's not the privacy of your confidential health information. That's what HIPAA is about, confidential personal health information, not accident information or the monetary side necessarily. So I just wondered if you could address, if you would address the what I see as an unprofessional behavior, and especially letting the patient know that you were upset that he got a bigger settlement than you anticipated.
I believe that I had a good rapport with the patient, which was one reason why we communicated via email and a phone conversation, so that any information that I did have, I discussed with him. If I didn't think that we had that good patient-doctor rapport, I wouldn't have communicated with him and would have just stuck communicating with my attorney. Since going forward, I do only communicate with the attorney and take the doctor-patient relationship out of car accident cases specifically.
And I would also caution you not to believe the rumors or stories you hear about changes in law, but to get the facts first so you don't make your decisions based on that. And I, not to interrupt you again, but your billings, you run together the years, 2016, 17, 18. They're not separated.
I was asked to provide all patient records, so that's,
No, I understand that, but is this a run-on bill? The amounts, the totals didn't make sense to me. Also, there are insurance payments, $14.95 on a PI case?
Correct.
Who's paying the bill?
Who paid that?
Who's the
health insurance paid that?
Who's the health carrier? I didn't see it in your records.
Cigna.
Cigna. Did you verify benefits with Cigna to know what would be paid and what wouldn't be?
I personally did not make a phone call conversation with them. I did, but they told me that I was supposed to submit to Medicare, especially health care. That was based off of previous treatment, not related to the car accident. So I had a history of knowing what they would cover when the car accident treatment started.
And then just final final comment, your notes, your record keeping on this patient. Have you taken a record keeping course before?
Yes, I have.
When you talk about subjective pain, especially in PI cases, you recognize that you need to measure and also measure objectively the patient's improvement from a baseline when you start treating. And I didn't notice that in your notes. So, also your diagnoses seemed a little bit short. Okay. There are a lot of little things about your documentation that could use some improvement. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Dr. Bennett.
Yes, Dr. Hagam, Dr. Wayne Bennett. As Ms. Powell pointed out, part of our due diligence here is to review the records. And I believe that there are...
Excuse me. Did someone just call in?
Yes, sir.
And would you announce yourself?
Matthew Bradley.
Okay. If you could please mute your phone, and we'll let you know when it's time to unmute.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Bennett?
Thank you. I apologize for the interruption. You were treating a motor vehicle injury. You would agree that's an acute injury.
Yes.
And you are aware that there are treatment guidelines and standard practices for documentation of acute injury care.
Yes.
All of the records were subpoenaed. You made a mention on at least two occasions of an exam referring to a separate exam document. I did not see that document. Did you provide it, or did you perform an exam?
I performed an exam, yes.
Okay, I do not believe that was included. Did you ever perform outcome assessments or any other functional outcome measurement or visual analog pain scale on this patient?
No.
Okay. You diagnosed cervical radiculitis. You understand that that is a fairly significant diagnosis in terms of prognosis and so forth? Okay. And how did you decide to manage that that aspect?
Through regular chiropractic care conservatively and in conjunction with his physical therapy that was being performed.
Okay. Excuse me, I have screens popping up here. Okay. You adjusted extremities on multiple occasions and, in fact, billed for manipulation of extremities.
Yes.
In the management of this case. What was the diagnostic basis for your manipulation of the extremities?
I adjusted the shoulder thinking that there may be an impingement in the shoulder that could be mimicking and radicular symptoms into the arm of the patient.
Yeah, you diagnosed the patient with radiculopathy.
Correct.
Okay, do you see an inconsistency there?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Okay, so my point, and I don't mean to just, you know, beat a dead horse to in a sense here, but clearly there are significant record-keeping issues and case management issues here that need to be addressed. Would you agree?
I agree.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Bennett. So I have a few questions. I guess it's not clear to me yet. Like, listening to DH, it sounded like his concern really was that you logged in almost impersonating him on the GEICO website. Now, with regular health insurance, we have our own provider portals that we can get through
Correct.
And I'm not familiar personally with the GEICO website to know what exactly happened. So that's a potential issue. And then it sounds like my board members have concerns about maybe adding an allegation of record keeping. So procedurally, if we want to continue the investigation and if there's a chance that there might be disciplinary action as a result of this, this would have to be forwarded to a formal interview or a formal hearing. And so I'm going to ask my board members what they'd like to do at this point. If they think that we can deal with this today in a non-disciplinary way, and if somebody wants to make a motion to that effect or not. But before we do that, I guess my question for Ms. Williams and for staff is if we're not sure yet how this login situation happened, I think it would be the right thing to do to investigate this further, unless my board members have an insight into this that I don't have right now.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Bennett here, I believe that we need to have the opportunity to review the exams to determine the extent of how much correction is needed here. I have concerns both in terms of documentation and in case care management.
Okay.
And so I believe that moving forward, it would be appropriate to have the opportunity to really do a good job of assessing, you know, what the situation is to issue an appropriate decision.
Okay. So that can be done as a continuation of this investigation, either to a formal interview or not, go ahead.
Do you want to add an allegation relating to record keeping?
I do.
And then do you want to do any additional investigation regarding the GEICO process?
Yes.
Okay. So your staff could maybe issue a subpoena to GEICO or make some calls to try to determine how it works.
Okay. Okay, so I guess we need a motion to that effect then.
Yeah, you could table this.
For further investigation?
Yes,
okay.
Or you can move it to formal interview. Either options.
Well, if we're going to add an allegation, do we have to, we would have to do more than table it?
Either way, if you're adding an allegation, then
okay.
Dr. Ho would have a chance to come back and address it with you at this level, or you can do it at the next level.
Okay, well, in fairness, I think that's what we need to do. So I'm going to direct staff to continue the investigation to contact GEICO and reach out with them to talk to them about their login process. And then also we're going to add an allegation of improper record keeping.
Can you make that a motion? Adding the allegation.
That's my motion.
Second.
Okay, is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, we've taken action to continue the investigation in fairness to everybody involved. So thank you for coming today, and you'll be invited back. Okay. Tab number four, I believe we have some people on the phone.
Yes.
On the matter of Dr. Hosen.
Yes, Dr. Abul Hosen and is on the phone. You can unmute, sir. And attorney for the complainant, Ms. Eck, is on the phone. And you can unmute. Please talk one at a time. The board will try to address you first, and if you would direct your comments to the board, we would appreciate that.
Hi, this is Dr. Guarino, chairman of the board. And so we're going to start with let's do a board briefing first.
Allegations include use of drugs or alcohol, inappropriate physical contact, sexual improprieties, danger to the health and safety, welfare of the public, and unprofessional conduct.
Okay, and board members, under tab four in your board meeting materials, we do have a statement by Dr. Hosen. I'm sure
yes,
that
sir.
You've read it at this point, but you can take a moment and read that. And then I'm going to go ahead and ask Dr. Hosen and his counsel if they have any opening statements that they would like to make at this point.
Actually,
good morning. Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, this is Dr. Kolash. Dr. Hosen did not have a representation. The attorney online is for the complainant.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's start with Dr. Hosen, and again, thank you for speaking one at a time. This is a recorded meeting, and for the sake of clarity and meeting minutes later, we're going to need everybody to announce who they are before they speak. So, Dr. Hosen, we've read your letter. Do you have anything additionally that you would like to say?
I think the letter kind of summarizes everything. Again, there's an ongoing sort of pending civil case. I'm kind of want to be, brief but direct, obviously. But I think it pretty much fits everything in there. A lot of the allegations, especially the drinking and or drug use, is just ridiculous. And the other stuff is, like I said, all everything's there in the letter. I really don't have anything else to add to that.
All right, thank you. So on the phone we have the complainant and her counsel, and I need to clarify if the counsel is licensed in the state of Arizona.
This is Amber Eck from Hickliston Eck. I am not licensed in Arizona.
Okay, then we cannot take your testimony today.
Unfortunately, in order to appear before the board, only a licensed, an Arizona licensed attorney can do that. So,
okay, very good. Very good. And just for one clarification, is the complaining on the line as well, you said?
I don't think she's phoned in. I didn't hear her phone in.
Okay, so she is not, as far as we know.
So if you want to represent her, you would have to apply to the Arizona Bar for Pro Hoc Vice admission, and then associate with a local attorney here in order to appear before the board.
Okay, so should I disconnect from the call at this time?
You can listen to what the board decides to do with the case.
Okay, very well.
You just can't advocate or make a statement.
Okay, I'll follow you then. Thank you.
If I can ask you a question, since there is a pending civil case, and it kind of could be those both ways from my end and from the complaint, then, would it be okay to suggest that maybe that should disconnect? Because there are also, you can see there, has submitted a statement that kind of clearly shows, Ms. Eck, kind of showing extreme prejudice and malicious intent. So I would want to, again, like I said, I need to be kind of brief on what I say, but now, if Ms. Eck, I'm able to explain more, and Ms. Eck will disconnect because I don't want her to use any information incorrectly as she has already thus far.
Okay, well, I don't think that's necessary because this is a public meeting and she'll have access to any of the records from today.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, so I'm going to ask my board members if they have some questions for Dr. Hosen at this point. Ms. Powell?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about more toward our attorney. Since the young woman is obviously not represented and thought she would be, should we not postpone this hearing?
That is an option you have to
this case.
Table this.
Until we know whether she's represented.
And give her an opportunity to appear now that she...
Right, because she's not here, and obviously we have questions for her, or I do anyway, and we'd like to be able to directly ask her questions.
That is an option the board would have.
Well, we also have an opportunity with Dr. Hosen on the phone right now to get his testimony as to what happened that night and dispute any of the things that we have in front of us that she's alleged.
You can do that and have her come back and provide some information. Because it's not a hearing, this is just a fact-finding.
Okay. my question, Dr. Hosen. This information came to us late, so I was quite surprised. I assume you're denying everything that this young woman has said.
Correct.
Okay. What is the reason for doing these ceremonies in a hotel room when you have an office?
Right, But coming into town late, and the complainant, we had already done those ceremonies. So the plant ceremonies are, they're sort of a spiritual thing, and it really reduces anxiety and cleanses the body and detoxes. So we had already done one with, a group of the employees. Well, the reason, back to your question, the reason for the ceremonies, that's where I say I don't have a home in Arizona. I live in California, actually, and I commute back and forth. So, coming late, I didn't want to do another ceremony because, again, I don't know if I can give out some information without giving any sort of, private health information, even though she's not a patient. But after the first ceremony, she was really helped by the ceremony. And I was coming to town late. I actually even suggested, maybe we should just do it the next day, but because I need to have a meeting with the client anyway in regards to a lot of the issues that were occurring. She insisted, so I said, okay, fine, let's just do it. So that's why we do it there. I mean, there really isn't, another reason why, other than that's where I was staying that evening.
Why not at your office?
Because I'd want to drive all the way down into the office, and that's where we did it the first time with the group. So we just decided to do it there.
What is the substance that she's referring to that you used during the ceremony?
So it's called, well, in South America, it's called rapé. Here, the Native Indians call it hapé. So it's basically, if you look it up, it's plant snuff. So it's plants that are prepared in different ways and it's reduced to a powder. And then it's applied through the nose, and then it immediately begins to, calm the body, cleanse the body. Some people are able to really get into a very deep meditation, if you know how to use it correctly. So it's different plants. It all depends. There's various, various types and all sorts of plants.
And this is something that you put together, this product?
No. I get it. We've been approved a few times on these kind of sort of health missions and things of that nature. So we get that shipped from Peru. You can buy it locally. I just like the stuff that comes straight from the indigenous tribes, because they benefit from the funds, from the money from us purchasing from them. So I don't prepare myself. No, it's quite the process. I don't know how to do that.
Okay, just one more time. Tell me what the name of the product is.
So you can look up Hape, H-A-P-E with an accent, or Rap, it's called Rape in South America, R-A-P-E with an accent as well. I think either way it will come up in any sort of search.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Bennett?
Yeah, Dr. Hosen, I'm Dr. Wayne Bennett. Real simple yes or no's on these would be good. Did you, in fact, arrange to meet with this woman at a bar at a hotel in the evening in Yuma?
The simple would be I didn't arrange. When she arrived, she said, I'm downstairs. And I said, okay, I'll be right down. I had actually fallen asleep and woke up to the call, and I came downstairs.
So, yes or no?
I did not arrange for to meet at the bar. I arranged for her to come to the hotel because I was going to drive all the way down to my office, which was not my office, but what I was saying.
Okay. And the purpose of this meeting was to perform a healing. Is that correct?
I wouldn't call it a healing. I mean, I think that takes a lot, especially when there's several health issues to address. It was to have a meeting. I was supposed to get there earlier, so I had arranged to say, you know, we need to have a meeting, but it kind of started to run late. I was coming in town. So it was for that and also to have a meeting to really get some very important details and irons and things out in regards to her employment.
Okay, and we would you call it then a ceremony, this thing, this ritual that happened? What would you call it? What term would you use for it?
I would definitely use ceremony. Yeah.
Okay, and was this ceremony performed in a doctor-patient context?
No.
So the patient, the complainant is not a patient, or was not a patient at the time.
No.
Okay. And did you consume alcohol during the encounter, either in the bar with ML or during the ceremony? Hello.
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not sure if you're my answer. I couldn't tell. And actually, the alcohol counteracts pretty heavily with the alcohol. It's not recommended, being on somewhat of an empty stomach and, properly hydrated is part of it.
I'm not asking about ML, doctor. I'm asking about you. Did you consume?
Yeah. No. I answered that. I was just kind of explaining further.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Okay, so this is Dr. Guarino, Dr. Hosen. So you're a chiropractor, and
sure.
And we're here to handle matters that are chiropractic related and patient safety related. So you're suggesting that there is a civil case.
Mm-hmm.
That's pending right now?
Yes. It's, a complaint hasn't been filed. Both sides have, evidence that we're working through to see if, make sure that we come to an amicable resolution, because part of the concern is that it took me away from my time. I'm in this profession to help people. As you can see in my, in my letter, there's a lot of other things that we've come across with our investigations and things of that matter. It's just, to me, again, total waste of time, complete negative energy, and it's just not something, that I like doing. So there is, we're trying to resolve this and just kind of move on, but really all depends on what kind of element we can come across. But as far as, it's pretty black and white and pretty simple on our end. But, the opposing end is obviously trying to get some financial gain. So making the water very muddy and filing complaints that it shouldn't be filed. So,
again, I'd like some concise answers. I know you want this to go away, but we need to get to the bottom of some of the facts of what happened. And so there's an allegation that there was video evidence in the lobby, it sounded like, of the hotel, that you were being sexually inappropriate and making contact with the complainant.
Okay.
So what do you say to that?
Yeah, no.
Did that happen or not?
That did not happen. That happened, and the complainant wouldn't have, come up to the lobby. We did have a meeting and one-on-one. We discussed a lot of things. We discussed issues with her parents, personal stuff. That had happened. And, I don't think the complainant would have felt comfortable to come upstairs and continue with the ceremony. And I had even asked, it was kind of getting late, do it tomorrow, because I know that she has to drive, and she doesn't live close.
Okay, so I want to know, again, in as few words as possible, What was the purpose of the ceremony, and what are your qualifications to perform that?
So you definitely don't need any qualifications to keep this brief, I want. But I've done the ceremony with shamans and healers, and I know the application of it very well. You know, I use it. My family members use it. As a friend, a lot of healers, local or overseas. And the purpose was, again, the complaint felt a lot of relief of anxiety, which she thought other ways to control that anxiety and other issues. Again, I'm not sure, you know, how much I could say without getting into the patient's health. But yeah, that was the purpose, is really to allow the patient to get better or heal. Kind of not supposed to use that word, but so there's a lot of applications for it, you know.
Okay, so you consider yourself a shaman, is that correct?
No, I don't consider myself a shaman. You don't really need to be a shaman to. This is why, you know, Raphael Plasma is sold. You could buy, there's some places in California and all over the place where they do sell plasma. You just have to use it, understand it, and use it properly. And that's it. I would consider myself a shaman. I consider myself very well versed in the plants and the application of the Raphael.
Do you believe that what you did was outside of the scope of chiropractic in the state of Arizona?
The claim was not a patient, and I wasn't there to do any.
Well, you're saying she wasn't a patient, but you did say that you were treating her for anxiety, so it seems like a bit of a gray area there.
Yeah, I didn't say I was treating her for anxiety. I said that I was facilitating and showing her how to use the plant medicine, which she had used before, and she felt good. It's kind of like, you know, we did this, hey, drink more water, or you should probably take some multivitamins, or this and that. Doesn't mean that I'm treating somebody or trying to heal them.
Okay, so she alleges that you were in the hotel room and you made unwanted sexual advances, including putting both of your hands down her pants. Did that happen?
No.
Okay, are you currently being investigated by the FBI?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. I'm going to move that we enter into executive session to get legal counsel.
Motion.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, what that means is that we're going to go speak to our attorney for just a few minutes, and then we'll come back, so we need you to stay on the phone for us.
Okay.
Hi, this is Dr. Garino. We're back into regular session at 10:15. We're hearing a whole bunch of noise in the background. If you could maybe quiet that down a little bit, we could hear better.
I want to give you a second.
Okay. Yeah, that's much better. Thank you. I'm going to ask staff if we could get a clarification on compliance with the most recent subpoena.
So Dr. Abdul Hussein Hosen, didn't respond to the subpoenas timely. His response was due 10 days after it was done, and we got it last night. And the proof of continuing education was also late.
Okay. So is he compliant with all the continuing education?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. And then the current probationary terms?
Staff is currently investigating, preparing a complaint that he is not in compliance with the current probation.
Okay. And so, Dr. Hosen? You are currently on a probationary status. How come you have not been compliant with your probation terms?
In which stipulation of probation and clarification?
I'm going to ask staff to look into that.
Okay. So for case number 2017-061, the order was for probation, which was signed by you on March. Let me get the date. March 19th, I think.
March of this year.
So we sent it on May 30th of May. There it is. March 12th, 2019. You signed the order. And the orders were probation for 5 years to have a board-approved monitor. Have abstained from alcohol and have random screenings and take the ethics and jurisprudence exam within 6 months. That is just done. And then the ethics and boundaries exam within 1 year, so that's not, you know, non-compliance. But the monitor is.
So have you contacted a board-approved monitor and contracted with them?
I haven't contracted with Fang. I did contact two. The issue was with all the travel. The only monitoring that I've had is actually to have a device in my car. And then also I'm still going to the weekly court-appointed classes, which they do random. And then also, face-to-face with therapists. And they do random testing there. With my travel schedule and it was very difficult to secure that. So those are the.
What is your
been able to do?
Dr. Hosen, what is your travel schedule? Are you going back and forth between California and Arizona, or what are you doing?
Yeah, California, Arizona, and even other states. And then traveling abroad as well, so I'm kind of really always on the road, so to speak.
Okay, so you do realize though if you violate your probationary terms, you could lose your license, and so you're choosing to travel instead of complying with your probationary terms.
Well, not choosing. It is for it's for work and education, but. I call those places and I figured, weekly when I come back into town, I'm technically being monitored by, court-appointed places, and I do have my device in my car. So I was trying to kind of get settled into a different schedule. The board approved monitors, that just didn't come through, but I mean, I can always.
Okay, well, so you're aware you need to comply with every term of the probationary order.
I am.
Okay. All right, board members, at this point, what's your pleasure? I think it's clear we're going to continue the investigation. Somebody want to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Angela Powell, I'll make a motion to forward to formal interview.
Okay, is there a second?
There is.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, what we voted to do is continue this matter into a formal interview. You'll be invited back, Dr. Hosen, and compelled to come back, and you'll be under oath with your testimony. So thank you so much for cooperating with the investigation so we can get to the bottom of this in all fairness. And thank you. So you can hang up now. And
oh, were you going to add any allegations to the case?
For failing to comply with the subpoena.
And then
failing to comply with the probationary terms. So I will take that as a friendly amendment to your motion.
So you can just do you want to forward to formal interview and add two allegations, non-compliance with subpoena and non-compliance with this probation agreement.
That's it, the subpoena is one of this. Okay. Yes, so I'll accept that amendment.
Okay, and is that a friendly second to the second?
I second the second.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, so that concludes the matter. The ayes have it, and we'll continue the investigation with the two added allegations for failing to comply with the subpoena and also failing to comply with the probationary terms. Okay, so we're going to... That ends the matter for case number 4 with Dr. Hosen, and we're going to go on to tab number 5, which is the matter of Dr. Joseph Greer.
The chair might want to recognize that there is a weather to open for Dr. Greer also.
Okay. Is it appropriate for us to combine those?
Yeah, you probably want to do a separate vote, but you want to have him address both at the same time.
Okay. All right. So, yes, go ahead and have a seat, please. Okay.
Dr. Greer has signed in to speak, as has complainant MR.
Hi. So to protect your identity, again, we're going to refer to you only by initials. I'd like you to introduce yourself for the record with your initials.
MR.
Thank you. And Dr. Greer, can you introduce yourself too?
Dr. Joseph Hill Greer.
Thank you. And so we're on tab number 5 right now, and I would like a board briefing, please.
Allegations include danger to the health and safety and welfare of the public, improper treatment, malpractice, and unprofessional conduct.
Okay, we've read all the board meeting materials in front of us, and I'm going to start with Dr. Greer. Do you have anything you'd like to add, additional information that we could use or may need?
I was asked to bring the record, which I did, and in person that way. I'd also like to understand or make the statement of I can't understand, and I do understand how MR was frustrated about receiving her refund quickly. And by doing the financial institution thing that she did, and also not supplying with any record that I have of wanting to stop care and wanting a refund, that in writing instead of doing verbal. And I asked for that on the phone call with her, and also going through that, and then I received within a short period of time after that a thing from the financial institution wanting to have go through and want to have a refund. They asked for all the records. I sent those back real quickly for them. Within a few days after that, I received the thing from the board about this case going on, also something about that time period before the Better Business Bureau. And I did contact the institution again and again, trying to find out if they had refunded the money to her. They said they could not tell me that. I found out on Monday that they had refunded the money to her. They would not give me anything in writing. They said I had to contact other places, which I did several times, and I was disconnected several times from the care credit company. I have gone through everything with the patient. I did not do anything improper at all with the patient. I tried to have everything in writing that she had signed and gone forward, and that the care for her was done in a fair and equitable way, records were done properly, and she was notified of her issues, and her biggest problem was not being able to come to the office in a timely manner. I did supply her with a letter asking for permission from her employer to allow her to come into the office in a timely manner that way, and she had a hard time doing that. And so by not having the written request of that, at least my records in any way, shape, or form, and having phone call conversations that things were not done in a hastily manner, and then as soon as I got things with the front institution, I did supply them things very quickly, and they have refunded her money back at this time. Like I said, they would not tell me that for quite a long time, so this week involved that.
Okay, thank you. And at this point, I would like our patient MR to go ahead and give us a brief statement, knowing that we've read all the materials that were submitted.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
If there's anything additional that you'd like to tell us, right now is your chance to go ahead and do that. You know, we are not here to consider fee disputes, but we do get involved in patient safety issues, and if we get involved if you were charged a fee for a service that you never got, or for fraudulent, you know, activities, wrongful billing, those kinds of things. So go ahead and if you have anything you'd like to tell us right now.
I would like to state that in the end, the money was adjusted. There was a fee adjustment with the finance company.
With Care Credit?
So, yes, sir.
Okay.
However, with respect to what the doctor indicates, he never once asked me for anything in writing. I did speak with him, and he explained that he had to review his records to determine the amount and the difference of what I was charged. I never received a return call from him. I tried to be patient. I waited about a month. I called him back. And then we continued the conversation, and at that point I demanded the adjustment to be completed. In the meanwhile, I did speak with the Credit Care. They advised me that I could submit a complaint to them with respect to the activity of the monies. I was led to believe that this was, for lack of a better description, a company where you get charged based on the service, like a credit card, not the complete $1,000 to be taken up front. And then the last thing with respect to the doctor's statement, again, he did not ask me for anything in writing. And with the billing, I did receive a copy, or first off, a cover letter, and then a copy of his statement to Care Credit, which shows the letter that the doctor prepared was dated June the 9th. However, the fact state on the letter to Care Credit was dated July the 12th, which was around the time that I came for this last hearing here with the board. And then ultimately the letter that was dated from Care Credit to me advising that the adjustment had been completed was dated July the 25th. So it kind of followed through. I did file a complaint with the Better Business Bureau after my first contact with the doctor in discussing the adjustment of the finance. What I was advised by the Better Business Bureau was that two notifications were sent to the doctor. Ultimately, he never did respond to their complaint information, and that it would be held for 12 months. Once the money was adjusted, I did follow through with advising the Better Business Bureau that the monies had been adjusted. But the other portion of my complaint had to do with the fact that the doctor did pull my right leg after having told him verbally. He then had taken x-rays, and he pointed out my two, the hardware. I have two artificial hips. So he was well aware of the fact that I do have artificial hardware in place, and he pulled my leg, which resulted in sciatic pain. I had excruciating pain. I was unable to stand and put pressure on my leg. And I, giving him the benefit of the doubt, I returned to his office, and I continued to return for a full week. Well, actually, it was 5 visits within 4 days to see what we could do here. And he did do the physical adjustments to my back. I was put the, there were electronic massage for like 15, 20 minutes. And I wasn't improving. I worked. So I then followed up with my medical practitioner. It was suggested that I discontinue with the treatment with the chiropractor and Advil, and then I had to follow through with physical therapy for 6 weeks. And to date, I still have numbness from my knee to part of my shin, and I continue to receive the spasms in my thigh. But thank goodness the pain is gone.
Okay, thank you. So you feel that the doctor injured you as a result of pulling on your hip, and it caused you to go and seek other care, and that's why you did not return back to him, and that's why you wanted your refund.
Right.
Okay.
And I told his staff that I was not going to return. I told his staff on a couple of occasions. I called the office because I continued to receive text messages as reminders, and I immediately called in and let them know I am not returning.
Did you file a malpractice suit against the doctor?
Did I?
Yeah.
No, sir.
Okay. And do you feel like was your hip joint made unstable from the manipulation that he did when he pulled on your leg, or was it just more the sciatic pain and the pain
just
down your leg?
Just the sciatic pain.
Okay.
Just the sciatic pain. I mean, I considered, in all honesty, I considered several options. I considered, and one of the options being civil or malpractice. My personal work experience has been in the legal field, so I know that there are various options available to me. However, my point in filing with the board, as well as the Better Business Bureau, contacting the Pima County Wellness Unit and such, was to let him know, one, honesty is important. Ethics in his profession is a must. And common courtesy, follow through. I don't want money out of the deal that I'm not entitled to.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I just want to verify with staff, so we... when we were requesting information from the doctor, he did not give us his continuing education information. And to this point, we still don't have it.
That's correct.
Okay, what do you say to that, Dr. Greer?
I have those in my records. I sent those to the boards.
Okay, so you're going to need to send it again because we don't have it.
Everything that was here, and that's what I did.
Do you have it with you right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and ask my board members if they have any questions for either the doctor or the patient at this point. Ms. Powell?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Chairman. As a non-physician, I can't comment about the condition relative to the treatment. However, as I'm reviewing the notes, I noticed, Doctor, that many times we make statements that the patient is getting better and she's getting worse. Statements where she's worse than getting better, they're contrary to the documentation of your VAS and other findings. The muscle spasms, if they increase since the last visit, you put decrease. Can you speak to that at all? And I can be on specific dates if you need me to.
As I'm going through the patient, I ask him to grade the areas and go through those areas that way. I do palpate. I do use the Thompson technique. The only thing I would even think about even thinking that might have even been put in late would be bringing the late checks back and forth. That might cost them, and then in a month, I do not remember saying that. Had a problem, yes, that she had more side problem bothered, yes, that was there.
She complains, her chief complaint is low back pain,
right?
And your initial exam confirms all of that, the tests you do, et cetera, et cetera. Every visit after that, you use cervical problem, a problem with her neck.
I'm sorry.
You're listing her cervical problem as the chief complaint on all of this except the first one when she came in. In fact, it was low back pain. Everything indicates low back pain, test results, etc. In the subsequent visits, you list the neck pain or cervical problem. You sequence the diagnoses as cervical being primary.
As I went through my notes early on, it was pretty much the primary thing they came in on that visit and not their major complaint, but they both all equal that way.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Why would she start out with such severe? And you had her low back pain is a 10 out of a 10. And then say, that's her low back pain. On her second visit, you address the cervical problem. Your scales don't make any sense. Neither does the order of care. It's as if you did these notes post haste, at quite a later date, shall we say?
No. I do mark down there. I'll go from there on the. I'm sorry. Did you finish what you asked me? I'm sorry.
If you look at your notes on 416, 417, 418, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay. On the 15th, so she dropped down from 10s down to 5s. I do have.
For VHS is 1/5, but before that it was 5, right?
So that's showing an improvement in those areas.
So that's on 4/5, then on 4/16, VHS 2 to 4, okay?
Right, the notes I sent.
And it's increased, but it's in fact less. There's inconsistencies, that's all I'm saying. I'm not sure if you could address that or not, but I wanted to point it out to you.
I'm just trying to understand what you're asking. I look at the ones improving, showing things are improving, yes, down to the cervical and also down to the lower back. And I do rate those in the scale from left to right. And also using those in the verbiage left to right. Like cervical will be number 2, thoracic will be number 2, lumbar and then lower back there. And the lower back we have 5s out of 10. Does that answer your question?
But when you talk about she's better or worse since her last visit, when she's worse, you say she's better. When she's better, you say she's worse. That's where I was confused.
So the patient's improving overall. I'm looking on the 18th here, down to the...
I'll bring you to a specific date.
Okay.
320. Okay, on 4/5.
I'm sorry, what date?
On 4/5, would you look at that one for me? Okay. At her worst, she's rated 4-5. When you put 4-4-5-5-5.
What you said here? Mm-hmm.
Oops. Excuse me, my screen keeps bleeping out. 4/5.
Overall, when I'm talking about improvements, it's overall improvement, not specific areas that way.
Under subjective.
Down the bottom of the show,
under subjective.
Under the subjective, showing that she's staying the same on 5.
Same.
MR, stated the complaint was staying about the same from the last visit.
Okay, and her last. When was her last visit? See what I'm saying? So you look on 320, that was her last visit.
320, uh-huh.
And what is her scale? She's a 10 over 10.
Correct, that was her first.
So it's not stayed the same.
I'm sorry?
So she isn't staying the same. That's what I'm talking about, those inconsistencies. I don't want to beat this, you know, beat you up too much on this, but it's important because there's inconsistency in whether she's getting better or worse. Or, I mean, I can't tell.
Okay. So to answer your question, I'm looking at the same as, well, I can see what you're saying there.
Yeah, same as last time. Last time was different.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay, that's it. That's all the questions I have.
Okay, Dr. Bennett.
Yeah, Dr. Wayne Bennett. My first question is for MR. Clearly, your chief complaint here has been low back and radiating pain down the legs and so forth. Am I correct in that?
No. Okay. Just back pain, not radiating down the legs.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Then I misunderstood the record here because
it didn't start with the radiation down the leg until after my leg was pulled.
Okay, so during the course of this overall treatment,
right,
your symptoms have consisted of low back pain and subsequent radiating pain into the legs.
Yes.
Am I correct so
yes,
far?
Sir. Yes.
When, if ever, did you complain of neck pain?
Never.
You've never complained of neck pain. Okay. And, okay. So, Dr. Greer, couple of things here. With regard to the visual analog pain scale, one thing, sir, I found to be very confusing was your sequential 5-5-4-2-2. Really, especially with the software that you have, which I'm familiar with, it would be very easy to simply have a sentence for each one so it identifies which area. That way the record could be understood better. So, I read through your initial exam. Did you perform a lumbar active range of motion?
Yes, sir.
I did not see that in your record. That would be the date of service 4/12. Am I missing something there, sir?
4/12 would not be a range of motion, except for asking her having her move back and forth, I think, sir. Did I do a numerical thing at that time? No, I did the original examination.
What was the date of the initial examination?
3/20.
Okay, all right. Then, that notwithstanding, we may want to go back to that, but I noticed that I looked at the patient input, I looked at the body diagram, I looked at the initial examination, and there was no mention at all of a neck complaint. Why is cervicalgia part of your diagnosis?
As I go through the patient, I ask him to grade those things and fall that way. For example, I'm looking at cervicalgia. She graded motion. She was the lower back, and she did have, on that first visit, she did have radiating pain down into her legs also, she told me.
Okay.
This is on the chart. She did not mark that, but when I'm asking those questions, she did give that information to me, and I did document that there.
Okay.
On the...
I'm asking you about cervicalgia.
I'm looking at... I'm sorry. Thoracics, I work back, number three. Cervicalgia, number three down there, injury, unknown onset, it's on and off, patient rolling there, clearly already in pain, claim was greater than three.
And that's relative to what area, what body?
That was her neck, her cervical.
Okay. All right.
Number three on the examinations here.
Okay. So the patient is here today telling us that she never experienced neck pain. I read your record and I see no mention of anything in the patient input in the body diagram. And so you're using billing code 98942 throughout the course of care. And you understand the definition of 98942?
Right now I'm running blind, I apologize.
Okay, so it is manipulation of five or more regions of the spine, right? Am I correct about that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so in the absence of a diagnosis of cervicalgia and manipulation to the spine, would your billing of 98942 be appropriate?
I did have a diagnosis of cervicalgia.
I'm asking you. My concern here is this. I'm hearing the patient tell me she has no neck complaint. I see you billing 98942, which by definition you must be treating a neck complaint,
yes,
but she's saying she has no neck complaint. It makes me frankly question the ethics of you billing at that level of coding, when in fact if she had no neck complaint, then that code would be inappropriate. Would you not agree?
If that was totally the case, yes, sir.
Okay.
In going through with her and going through the consultation with her, she talked about stiffness and some pain from time to time.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going by, what was written here, what she told me. And yes, on the diagram, her lower back was her primary thing, so she came to the door. I asked her about that first. I went through everything else involved there, so there's nothing else involved. And she did talk about lack of range of motion, stiffness, and then some discomfort from time to time.
Okay. All right, moving on. When a patient complains of weakness, what does that mean to you? What does that set off any alarms for you in terms of a report from a patient?
Sure, the patient has impingement onto the nerves, instability of the musculature around those areas.
Okay, so a complaint of weakness in the leg following a manipulation should set off a red flag, should it not?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and in response to that, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's what happened with this patient, correct? She complained of she complained of pain in the leg and weakness.
When I did the Thomson weight check, brought the legs up, that's when she felt things in her thigh.
Uh-huh.
Not that her pain was radiated from her lower back down to the leg, although in the initial consultation, she did not mark it on the sheet. I did ask her for that information, if she had any problems down her leg, things, and she said, yes, she did.
Mm-hmm.
She's saying she didn't have it down. Now she can't remember that, didn't tell me that. I wrote things down for that situation involved her. I'm never going to be jerking on somebody's leg. That's not my procedure in any way, shape, or form. I did a quick check right that way and made things, and yes, it stretched in the muscle, I guess. That's what she said, how she did that. That's where that came into play.
Okay, well, it seems to me that the facts are fairly evident here. Patient had no radiating pain or weakness in the leg. Patient was adjusted. Patient then complains of radiating pain and weakness. The question I have here in terms of your diligence relative to the standard of care is, based upon hearing that from your patient, how did you respond? And so far what you've told me is you did a Thompson leg check.
Okay, the patient only had that pain after I did the check.
Uh-huh.
There was nothing there before.
Okay.
So now no adjustment was done at that time.
The patient complained to you of weakness in the lower extremity. Do you not agree that should result in some level of increased diligence and further inquiry on your part as a provider?
I did that.
By doing a leg check?
No. That's when she felt the pain in her leg.
Okay. I'm sorry. I did not see any response by you in your records to that change in complaint. And I'm just questioning that your clinical decision making there. Moving on. On the billing of 417, you show 6 units of ice pack billed for $54.
She purchased those from my
office. Okay. Totally cool. Your website says that you're a member of the Arizona Association of Chiropractic.
I have been at that time when it was made up.
So you are currently not a member of the...
I am not.
It also says that you're a member of the American Chiropractic Association.
I have been.
Are you currently?
No, sir.
So if...
That needs to be changed.
you probably want to get on that.
Yes.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Okay, so we're at a stage of initial action on complaints in our agenda, and, you know, so if this matter rises to a level potentially of disciplinary action, then it would have to be forwarded to a formal interview. And so my question for my board members is, do you think that this may rise to that level where we bring this back another day, or if we should take other action? But we still do need to verify continuing education for 2017 and 2018, which we have no record of, and the materials you've submitted today did not have it either. And
you
so
it was in stuff that my staff was supposed to fax to you.
Okay.
And that was not done, I guess. I mean, that staff member is no longer with me. So.
Okay, so if we decide to continue this, we'll add an allegation of failing to comply with continuing education proof, and you were requested with a subpoena, so it's failure to comply with the subpoena. And then you'll have an opportunity to submit that information forward to us. Board members, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, Angela Powell, I would make a motion that we move this to formal interview with the added allegation of the doctor's failure to comply with continuing education request.
From the failure to comply with the subpoena?
The subpoena, excuse me, the failure to comply with the subpoena for continuing education.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, and for further discussion, you know, we'll have, if the motion carries, we'll have both parties back under oath, and we can continue to get their testimony and try to get to the bottom of what happened, whether there was a leg adjustment or not, and that type of thing. So I'm going to go ahead and call for the question. Those in favor of continuing the investigation to a formal interview with an added complaint of failure to comply with the subpoena, go ahead and signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, we're going to bring this matter back, and in all fairness, you'll both have a chance to testify under oath, and we'll make some decisive action very likely on that day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Greer, we're gonna go out of order in our agenda because you're tab number 9 as well, which is under our tab of whether to open or not, so there is no case at present, but we do have a complaint, and since you're here, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record for tab number 9. Okay, and Dr. Kolash, what do you have for us?
We have a complainant who wishes to remain anonymous at this time. If it goes further, we will explain that that may not be possible, but the complaint is in your board book, and she's alleging improper billing, patient abandonment, and improper unprofessional conduct.
Okay, and Dr. Greer, you've been notified of this. What do you...
I have no idea what this is.
You don't know because you don't know who it came from.
Well, the patient did contact me. I think that's what you're talking
about.
She may
have. There's
okay.
No complaint.
So there's.
So
he wouldn't know.
Anything
you,
to respond to.
Okay.
I think this is... probably a misunderstanding on my part because I didn't actually look at the document. I was answering a question. I thought the question to me was it was a completely anonymous complaint where there was no name, which in that case comes to the board. So this is my misunderstanding.
Staff will open
the
complaints and
write
okay. Back another name.
All right, so at this point we can move to
so
take
you
no action.
Staff to open
or,
it
you or to open up a complaint with. More information.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Since it was listed as a whether to open, is it not best to have a motion?
You can open it or address that. Either one is fine. As long as your minutes reflect you addressed it.
Okay. Well, I'll move to open up a complaint for further investigation for potential patient abandonment and improper billing, failure to supervise. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So the motion carries. We'll get more information to you, Dr. Greer, regarding that complaint. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to go back to tab number 7 in the matter of Dr. Kurt Kiefer.
We're skipping 6.
Tab number 6.
Okay, I'm sorry. Dr. Bradley's on the phone, tab number 6.
So, I'm mute. Previously, Dr. Bradley was in attendance, but he's on the phone now. and complainant A, he is in attendance.
Hi. To protect your identity, again, we're going to refer to you as your initials only, so I'd like you to introduce yourself with your initials.
Hi, I'm EP.
Thank you. And then Dr. Bradley, can you hear us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Matthew, Dr. Matthew Bradley.
Okay, thank you. And is anybody else on the call, counsel or otherwise?
No,
sir.
Okay. Great. We're going to have Dr. Kolash give us a board briefing then.
Allegations include sexual improprieties, failing to report an arrest, noncompliance with subpoena, danger to the health, safety, and welfare of the public, and unprofessional conduct.
Okay. Dr. Bradley, what do you say to that?
I went in front of the board for this exact same matter back in May when Dr. Sega turned me in for the same thing, and I was ordered to do an EBEST evaluation for this that I completed.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead. You have something more to say?
It's also an active investigation as far as I'm aware. I have an attorney, Todd Nolan, out of Mesa, that is fully convinced that this will be dismissed because I didn't do what she's claiming.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and let AP go ahead and if you have anything you'd like to say at this point, now is your chance.
Okay. I'll just review a little bit about what occurred. So I was seen at Dr. Flanagan's office and was injured with decompression. When I came back in about a month later, letting him know that I was having pain, Dr. Bradley was a new provider there and saw me from the August 10th of last year, the 24th. During that time, he was working on adjusting the neck pain. On the last visit with that office, I was told by the front desk that I was being let go. They were no longer giving me free treatments or treating me. I had never been fully re-examined about the pain I came in with or if it had resolved. So I was really upset that day. Dr. Bradley treated me. He had always been really nice to me. When I had left, he had let me know that he was thinking of opening or had an option to open another practice and that he would like to help me if I would like to be seen. So anyways, he gave me his number and we texted that afternoon. And I said, I apologize for being emotional. Today I was very upset. Thank you. Let me know when you open your practice. So after that transpired, I received a message from him on the 24th of August, the 26th at 10:34. Do you want to hang out? And then sorry. And then September 20th, hey, and that was at 12:14 a.m. And then hey again at 3:05 a.m. I didn't reply to those texts. So I had a random number texting me on the 1st of September, or excuse me, the, I think it was the end of September, September 20th after that previous text. That was from an unknown number, and it was photos of someone naked, and then vulgar text. So I asked who it was and didn't hear anything. I just want to review how everything came to surface so you understand. So then on October 1st, I had another text from a different number with the same kind of texting. I said, please leave me alone. And it continued and actually exacerbated the texting to a higher level. So at that time, I didn't want to make assumptions. I was trying to be understanding. And so I contacted a previous chiropractor at the clinic and said, hi, some concerns with these texting. It seems like it's in line with my last visit and these other texts. And he let me know that another employee there was receiving texts. So at that time, I reached out to Dr. Feiga, and I let him know what had happened. Said, I'm not sure if this is true, but I want you to be aware. And then at that time, he confirmed a notification of their staff that were being contacted by Dr. Bradley from what he told me. So at that point, before even talking to Dr. Bradley, I had contacted the police regarding the text and didn't say who I thought it was, just that I wanted to see if this could be traced. And so that's kind of where everything has come up. I had talked to a coworker whose husband is an officer, and he was the one who had contacted me later and said, I want you to be aware of issues with the chiropractic board and things that I've seen. At that time, I was upset. I was angry because I was trying to be patient with what was happening and considerate of everyone's life he could. And then I was told by Dr. Feige, and even in the statement regarding why I had contacted you guys about that I had wanted free treatments and that I was a difficult patient and that I had other numbers of staff there. And I was being attacked and my character was being challenged when I didn't seek any of this. So anyways, I'm upset, I'm mad. And I'm upset that I was not trained to go after anybody, but there's no remorse, there's no accountability. And from what I've seen, there has not been accountability with other behaviors. And that makes me upset because I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing this. And I didn't seek out those people, but I had to continue to move forward because this is not a new thing. This is not just me. And that's where we are today. So just to explain my side.
Okay. And so as I read through the board meeting materials, it looks like the pictures that were sent to you were sent from a phone number that's still yet to be identified. Has that been identified as directly coming from this doctor?
I have been in touch with the police because they have been following up with me, and the investigation right now, the information is public. Okay. And the number that has texted me was connected to a staff member who was also getting texts. The photos that were sent to me were linked to Dr. Bradley's ex-girlfriend. The same photos that were sent to me were sent to her, and that was clarified. And I just recently found that out. So, again,
I'm just wondering, so is it possible, I'm just trying to consider all possibilities, is it possible that either his ex-girlfriend or the other staff member that already had those pictures could have forwarded those to you, and that they may or may not have come from Dr. Bradley?
The police took my phone, and they were allowed to go through and pull all of my texts and all my photos and all imaging and data that I had. Mm-hmm. I allowed them to do that, and so I don't know those people. It has not been released to me who the other women are by Dr. Bradley, by the police, anybody. So I have no idea who these people are. So that wouldn't be something. And if it was, that would be in the documentation with my phone.
Okay.
Information.
Yeah. So you're asking the question, how would they get your phone number if they came from these other places? Right. So the question would be, how would they get your phone number to send you the pictures if it came from another source like that?
Exactly.
And so the timeline was that you got these texts from him into the late evening, and then after that, then you got pictures coming.
The same night.
The same night. Okay. All right. Board members, questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have a technical question. I was not on the board in May, so I'm unfamiliar with the initial complaint that Dr. Bradley is referring to, having said that this, stipulating that this had been addressed previously. Can I get briefed on that status?
Sure. So previously, Dr. Feige had filed a complaint alleging some similar behavior. He mentioned that there were several women involved. I don't believe this complainant was named in that allegation.
So it would be appropriate.
She was named in the initial allegation.
Okay. So the question that I have is it appropriate for us to initiate this as a discrete new complaint separate from the initial complaint?
Well, I think you need to clarify if this particular patient was part of that, then it would have been resolved through your earlier decision. If she wasn't, I was under the impression she wasn't. So it was a new complaint, but your staff would need to clarify that. I don't know the answer.
I'll ask the staff if they have any other recollection. I don't remember the names of the victims in the previous complaint.
Do you
want to
take a
recess? Yeah, let's take a 5 or 10 minute break here, and we'll give staff a chance to research that so that we can do the right thing today, okay? Okay, we have a quorum. We're back in our regular meeting. Do we have a definitive answer on this case?
May I suggest we go to executive session?
Okay, is there, I'll make a motion to go to executive session to seek confidential advice from our attorney and review records.
Second.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we're going to break into executive session, and we'll be back in just a few minutes to seek legal advice. Okay, the time is 11:26 and we're back in regular session. Thanks for your patience. So, does anybody want to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion and preface this by saying if you need further information, staff can explain to you why. The motion would be to table this situation temporarily. Table while the staff further investigates the issues at hand.
Okay, is there a second?
There is.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries. So we're going to continue the investigation, but it's tabled for today. Okay. Go ahead.
What does that look like as far as will we have to return and do this again, or what does that look like for next step?
Yes, you'll have the opportunity to come back and testify when it's brought back. And if you have further questions, we can fill you in. Okay, thanks, Dr. Bradley, for joining by phone. That concludes the matter for today. And now we're going to go to tab number 7 in the matter of Dr. Kurt Kiefer.
Dr. Kiefer is not signed in. This is a case that was malpractice brought to our attention. Dr. Kiefer allowed his license. Dr. Kiefer allowed his license to lapse. Then we received the notification. A complaint was opened, but in discussions with Mary, the timing of those two things was actually reversed. If the complaint had gone out prior to him allowing the license to lapse, then it would still be proper to hear it. But since he allowed his license to lapse first, before he got notification that we were opening a complaint, that it should just be closed, or that's an option for you to do.
Okay, so he's on administrative suspension. He did not renew his license,
correct?
And now he's off the grid. We have not been able to get a hold of him.
That's correct.
Okay, so what happens now to his license? So we'll have to see where that goes.
If he applies for renewal, then the complaint can come back. He'll have to announce that he had malpractice, a case against him, and the board can rehear at that time what happened.
Okay.
So is it, question, Mr. Chairman, is it correct to assume that because he has no active license, he does not fall within the jurisdiction of the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners?
Right, that's what happened, was he allowed his license to lapse, and then we found out about the malpractice issue. And at that time, it was practice for staff to just open a complaint on malpractice.
So it's not actionable. It's not actionable by us at this point?
That's correct.
Okay.
But they did get a judgment against the doctor, right?
Yes.
It's settled. The malpractice case is settled.
Yes.
Okay. So we need a motion then
to
take no action.
Case, yeah.
I'll make a motion to close the case until the doctor, if and when he returns, to renew his license.
Yes.
All right, second.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries, and we will go on to tab number.
We need Mary's advice for tab number 8.
Okay. Let's go out of order then to licensure, tab number 10. Matter of Chris Davis.
We'll turn that over. Deputy Director Lindsay.
Hi, are you Dr. Davis?
Hi.
Hi, have a seat.
Thank you.
Chris Davis, DC, has applied for licensure by examination.
in physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedures certification. His application is complete at this time. Dr. Davis held a license in the state of Utah, issued March 25th, 1997. On his application, Dr. Davis disclosed that he agreed to surrender the Utah license in April of 2014 for a period of 5 years for having a sexual relationship with a patient. Dr. Davis holds no other licenses and has no other disciplinary action.
Okay, doctors, do you have any questions, or board members, do you have any questions for the doctor?
Did Dr. Angela Powell, did you marry this woman?
No, and you know, it's extenuating circumstances. You know, this is a gal that I knew outside of the practice. She actually was a neighbor and had actually belonged in the church I went to. So there was, you know, it was outside of this. She didn't become a patient for many years later, and remember in that time, I made some major life choices that weren't wise, to say the least. And I've definitely learned my lesson since, and learned a lot over the past 5 years. And I need to kind of get, I love the practice of chiropractic, I miss it. And I want to be able to practice it again. We moved here from Utah with me and my family. Not that it matters, but I'm happily married 29 years. I was able to make amends with my wife and my family, and it was a
Dr. Davis, just out of curiosity, the last 5 years, what have you been up to?
First 2 years, I didn't do anything. the last 3 years, I've been focused on investing. If the investing would have gone better, I probably wouldn't be here right now. So part of my purpose for being here is I still need to provide, I still need to make money. I have five sons, and I have one living at home, and I have three in college, and so I need to produce some income for my family and keep moving forward.
Okay. I have no questions.
Okay. Does anybody want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I think we should grant the doctor the license.
Okay, upon payment of appropriate fees.
Upon payment of appropriate fees.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, you'll be granted a license once you pay your fees.
Thank you very much, I appreciate it. Yeah. I did pay the fees initially with the licensure. Is there additional fees that I need to pay?
You have paid all
of
the
appropriate
fees.
Okay.
Thank you very much, I really appreciate you.
Okay, we're going to go on to board meeting minutes, tab number 12 now. Well, we need counsel for that one. So, we'll go through page by page. And looking at page number 1 of 7, any changes, additions, deletions? Apostrophes, commas. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. 5. Page 6. And page 7. I did not find any. Did anybody? Okay. Is there a move to approve?
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Second. Second by Dr. Bennett. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. The September 25th, 2019 board meeting minutes are approved. Okay. Do you want to go on to the budget report?
So in your materials is the first quarter fiscal year report is rather austere. It's kind of, we haven't really spent anything, and the money is not coming in until coming up soon. So it's really not much there to report, except that we're well within our budget.
Okay.
It's always good.
Yeah, it basically shows what our rent is and what our expenses for personnel is. So if there aren't any questions, it's a pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Is it the purview of the board to approve this budget, or is it just to have say that we look at it?
Just you can choose.
But if we don't like it, we can argue with the governor.
Is that how that works?
I do have to say that I've looked at it and balanced it off.
All right. I've just wondered about what we're supposed to be doing with this document.
Oversight.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, so that's tab 14. Tab number 15 is a report on the Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Board's district meeting. I attended that with Dr. Kolash. We missed Ms. Castro and her input on that one. So the state licensing boards get together a couple of times a year. We have a district meeting where two of the five districts regionally got together, and we met in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. There'll be an annual meeting that'll be at the end of March. We like to go and get information from other chairmen of their boards and staff and hear how they handle the same types of problems that we see, as we all see similar situations. State laws vary, you know, from state to state on scope of practice issues. The Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Boards is kind of like an association of licensing boards, so that we can get together, and they give us different tools to try to help some of the same problems that we're having. And so they have different programs, such as certifications for chiropractic assistants, and they have pre-approved continuing education, vehicles that make it easier for us to do our job when we get inundated with all of the different groups that want to go ahead and provide continuing education. They have a passport program to try to solve some of the licensure issues from state to state for travel to treat issues, if there's a team physician, that type of thing that goes from one state to another. I've been attending it for 6 or 7 years now. I think it's always valuable to talk to other people and hear some of the hot topics. And one of them right now is all the CBD oil products that are out there. And as benign as they may sound, there was a consensus in the room of about 8 or 10 states that none of us should be selling the CBD oils, because they're derived from THC products that are still scheduled, I believe, as a Schedule 1 by the FDA. And that being the case, everybody seemed to agree that's until that reclassification happens, that's not something that any of the chiropractors in the state should be selling right now, which is perplexing, because, they're selling it everywhere else, including in different massage, clinics and all around. So just a thought-provoking topic that came to pass. Dr. Kolash, do you have any comments from your participation?
That was my first FCLB meeting as a executive director, and I found it very helpful with the types of issues that we were all experiencing. So the questions and roundtables that we had, I felt were very appropriate for what we're doing. It was right on time. CBD was an interesting one. How do we handle physicians with impairment, and how is that changing? And that we had just had our board education from our impairment physicians, and so I'm being able to share that and hear what other people were doing, and when they addressed issues of impairment with their physicians, whether or not to do it on the first DUI or what is a second DUI kind of mean to, in general, what's going to happen with a patient or with a doctor, and when is it appropriate for a board to get in and start with the evaluations for impairment and things like that. That was an excellent presentation and a lot of feedback. Got a list here of about 20 questions or so that we addressed in depth, and I'll see if there's another one that really stuck out to me. Not much that we are doing as a board so much, but what is the profession doing with the opioid crisis? And is there a role for a board to get involved with that? Maybe perhaps in lobbying or something along that line. It was a very interesting discussion. So I think those are the ones that stood out beyond the ones that you mentioned, sir.
Yeah, and along the lines of physician impairment, not only drug and alcohol, but competency and clinical competency. You know, when you've got a patient or with dementia or Alzheimer's, and we've got licensed chiropractors that run into the same, you know, problems. You know, when do you kind of take the keys away from the car, and how do you do that? You know, and so there's not a lot of good answers for that. Although we would, I guess we would see it first through patient complaints, and then we would have to make decisions based on that. So it was a good meeting. So that concludes my report on the FCLB. And now we can go back, now that we have counsel back in the room here, let's go to tab number 8, so, the matter of Dr. Joseph Mayer.
Staff is bringing this back to the board primarily for guidance in subpoena power. Typically, the board has delegated to me subpoenas for the typical complaints and what is involved in getting those done. As we're reviewing this case, there is potential subpoenas that we might want to go beyond what the initial complaint was. And so coming to the board to see if there's any guidance with that, or if there's any delegation additional that you would
the additional delegation. This is just for Dr. Mayer. Do you want staff to subpoena additional information prior to the formal interview? But you have to clear. I don't remember what the information is.
I do.
Okay. Go ahead.
There appears to be a strong suspicion of billing issues associated with the care of the records that were reviewed, and I think that we have a consensus from the board that at least the billing records for the sample patients that we already reviewed the treatment records for, and perhaps give the staff more discretion with regard to overall billing practices relative to the complaint.
Okay, so based on your review before, because you said that you had a consensus from the board, based on your first review to move it to formal interview, there were concerns?
Based upon the initial interview, I believe that we as a board have a consensus that there is the evidence of that compels us to seek further information with regard to billing.
So do you want to clarify what it is staff would be subpoenaing?
The billing records for the sample patients of the records were reviewed, and I really would prefer to have the authority to delve further in the event that we needed to confirm some things.
Just for clarification, I was comfortable with the ones that were mentioned, the patients' records that we presented. I was not sure that I had authority to go beyond that, and that's what.
And I'm not sure that we do either, but I would prefer to, just because, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire kind of a thing.
Well, I think that, but it's hard to just subpoena billing records for unknown patients. You need to either have staff, you know, get appointment books and pull a random sample from that.
And so does the staff need specific direction from the board in terms of billing dates or treatment periods or what have you?
It would help for them to form a subpoena.
Okay.
Is what the board's looking for.
So can I clarify? So we already have treatment records, and we have charges. You want the reply from the insurance company?
Yes.
Is that what you want?
So
yes.
The claim, the payments?
The explanation of benefits.
We want to know who's paying for what?
Yep. The EOBs.
Yes.
Okay.
And in the event that we specifically limit that information to the sample population of patients whose files we've reviewed, would it preclude us from in the future coming back and then expanding the parameters of the subpoena?
For this particular case.
For this particular case.
I mean, you can always, you know, at the formal interview, if information comes to light that causes you to want to investigate further, that's always an option to continue it.
Okay.
And get more information.
Thank you.
So you want to just direct staff to subpoena the EOBs?
And his fee schedule, so all the services, all the charges, and one maybe less delicate situation or documentation that might be helpful in this, in terms of if we even want to expand, would be not necessarily P&Ls, but his income report. So if he's making $50 million a year, and we know that this is a low income area, I mean, some of these care plans maybe are more than these people make. We should be able to see that relative to those records. Would it not be helpful to have that information? Maybe
yes.
It's P&Ls, I'm not sure.
I don't know how appropriate
that is for our, does that fall under our purview of what this board does?
Get that information.
Yeah.
And then the other question is, at what point do we hand off to like the FBI or another investigating authority?
Access.
What about his compliance manual on billing practices and policies?
I mean, that's up for you guys to decide.
Yeah, I like that.
I don't really know what that is.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
I'd love to see his compliance manual, or at least the section on billing.
So I have EOBs from all the patients that were listed. His fee schedule, which should be in his compliance manual.
It should be, but just in case.
Just in case.
And ledgers. Angela, you are, of course, the expert on this. Are the EOBs going to give us everything that we need forensically, or do we also want to see ledgers, patient statements?
Last meeting, we asked for the patient billing
payment
records.
Yes.
Okay.
That should show every charge, every payment, who made the payment.
Yes.
Very specific.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
Okay, so staff is directed.
So directed.
Okay. All right, and so now we're going to go to tab number 11 in the matter of Jordan Tharp. We had a couple of disclosures.
Jordan.
Is he here?
Yes,
he was.
Okay.
Dr. Tharp was here and is no longer here.
Okay.
So if you'd like, I can give you the board brief and you can decide
sure.
how you want to move forward today. Jordan Tharp has applied for licensure by examination. On his application, Dr. Tharp disclosed that he was charged with property damage in Westport, Missouri in August 2015. Dr. Tharp stated that he completed a 6-month diversion program and was required to pay a fine. On his application, Dr. Tharp also disclosed he was arrested in Overland Park, Kansas for suspicion of DUI and refused to submit to a breath test in July of 2017. Dr. Tharp stated that he completed a 12-month diversion program and was required to attend alcohol safety courses, as well as meetings with an officer of the court and paid a fine. Dr. Tharp does not hold a license to practice chiropractic, and board staff would note that the background check for Dr. Tharp has not been received from the Department of Public Safety.
Okay, so one option would be to grant a license pending the Department of Public Safety report.
Correct, pending there's no additional information received on that report that was not disclosed. That is an option. You also have the option to pend the application if you had questions for the doctor and wanted him to appear.
Right.
I would just remind the board when the next meeting is, and that's in the beginning of December.
And so what's our time frame for that, for taking action?
Well, the time frame will stop today since you are going to make a decision.
Okay.
So.
Okay, well, it's hard to ask him questions if he's not here.
Mr. Chairman, can we know why he's not here, why he left?
He stated to me that he had a flight to catch.
Did he let us know that in advance?
Didn't let me know.
Today, just today.
Okay.
And we did provide proper notice.
Okay, so there was some property damage, and then there was a DUI. He had a breathalyzer for 24 months. In the past, when we've had recent DUI charges, sometimes we would offer a consent agreement to approve the license on a probationary status, you know, and if we thought it was a serious concern, you know, we could, you know, make them do all the normal things like, you know, meet with an addictionologist, you know, submit them to random drug testing, and so on and so on, if that's agreeable to them. So my question for board members is, do you feel like he's kind of done that already over the last 24 months, and you think that you want to give him a chance with a regular license, or would you be more comfortable with a probationary status or a flat-out denial?
Mr. Chairman, my opinion on this is that one occurrence event is not evidence of high risk for recidivism. We have no evidence that this issue with alcohol has impacted his ability to practice his profession. But we're operating without a lot of information here. And frankly, I would like to ask this guy some questions, this doctor some questions, pardon me, don't mean to be disrespectful. So I'm a bit of a quandary here because I have no reason to feel that we should place him on probationary status, but I think it's important that we be able to be reassured of that. And so for that reason, it's my opinion that he should be asked to come back.
So I'll make the motion that we pend our decision regarding his license until we have the background report and or gain access to him for questions.
Now, can we pend it, or do we have to deny it?
No, you can table it because your time frame will stop because you want to get additional information.
Okay. Okay. So there's a motion.
Second.
With all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we will revisit that on another day.
May I ask a question? If we were to get his background check, like in the next day or two, and he's available by phone, would you like me to contact the board for a special meeting, or do you want to put it to a regular scheduled meeting?
I don't want to hold somebody up from practicing, and so I'm prepared to do that.
I would be amenable
to that. Yeah, considering our next meeting will not happen next month, so that's fine.
Thank you.
Okay, tab number 13 will be our last one. I guess anybody who's here, of course, you're not on our agenda at this point, or we would have already dealt with you, but if you've come here as a newly licensed person in the last year, you know, I'd like to give a call to the public right now before we do our board member training. And the call to the public is your opportunity to say whatever you like and get on the public record. You can say if you loved us or hated us. You can give us a star rating. We cannot reply. It's not a Q&A. And so I'm going to start with we'll start with the extroverts today. Anybody? Okay, that leaves only the introverts. So one at a time, if you like.
See, now you have something really positive to say. We remember you next time, right?
Yeah, I'm Dr. Mike McGurn. You gave me a license a couple months ago. I thought you guys were very fair and came from Florida where I practiced many years, and even New Jersey prior to that, so I'm an old timer, but I thought that everything was very fair and handled very professionally. And some of the gentlemen that were here I didn't see today that helped me get through the whole license process, but it worked out well. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Shannon Darrow. You guys gave me a license back in April when you guys were moving all over the place and all your forms were, it was kind of interesting. I was originally licensed in Georgia and then Washington, and this is my first time ever going to a board meeting, and knock on wood, my last. Not that y'all aren't awesome, but it was definitely a learning curve. You know, the stuff they warned us about in school, I didn't think people actually did it, but now obviously I've learned to do. So thank you again. It's definitely been a learning curve.
Thank you.
Dr. Jeff Bolton, I'm from Michigan. I was licensed last year in 2018, but I just moved here in January of 19, so this is my first year of licensure. I'm out in Tucson, and so I enjoyed the board meeting. Thank you for all of the great information today. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So we're going to get on with our board member training then. And Ms. Williams, what do you have for us?
Okay. Thanks.
So they can leave if they want to, correct? Okay.
Yes, thank you. All right. So I wasn't able to open up this in the board materials. There's a couple, like three documents, I think, for board training. Are you able to open them?
I was.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't work for me.
So I get a, when I open up the PowerPoint, it says I get a queue to sign in to set up office.
Yeah.
And then I just close out of that and then I can do it anyway.
Oh,
so
okay.
I don't know if I have a trial version and that's going to go away at some point or what's going to happen, but I can see it.
It's probably just me because I don't know how to do it.
Okay.
All right. So Dr. Kolesh and I talked about how the best way to go about the training. And if it's okay with the board, we're going to maybe do it piecemeal. One, because I think everybody might want to get going today, so I'm going to do part of it. And then over the next couple of weeks, because a couple of these things do take a little longer.
I think it would be great if we could break it up into, you know, one at a time.
Because I know one of the presentations I did, I think, took an hour and a half.
Okay.
Just for one of them, so
right.
We'll start. So I thought today what we could start with is the one entitled Board of Chiropractic Examiners, Initial Reviews and Formal Interviews. Alright. I don't have a fancy PowerPoint thing to do, so hopefully we can all just follow along. I'm kind of old school, so on this. And what I did, this was based on a presentation from another board, so I did find a couple things I did need to tweak after the fact, but I will go over them as they come along. So in a lot of this, it's your process, you're very familiar with it, so a lot of it you already know, but when the cases come to you in your initial action stage, whether you call it initial review, initial appearance, seems to be different terms for it, so that's the time for the board to review the investigation that your staff has put together. So it's your first look at the complaint, all the records, first chance to speak to the licensee and the complainant. So by statute, once you've reviewed your investigation, there's some limited actions you can take or you can move the case along. So you can always dismiss the complaint based on the information you have in front of you and what you hear from the complainant and the licensee. You can offer a consent agreement if you think that's the best way to resolve a complaint. It can be either disciplinary or non-disciplinary. Obviously, you have to have the respondent agree to do that. And if the board decides to offer a consent agreement, it's always helpful to the staff and to the Attorney General's office, to be very specific in what terms you want that to have. So that's why we always ask, if it's probation, what are the specific terms? So the more guidance the board members can give, the easier it is on your staff's end to actually put that consent agreement together and offer it. Sometimes you may have the respondent or the respondent's attorney contact your staff before the board meeting, so before you even got the case, and says, hey, do you think we could maybe try to work out a consent agreement? choose the consent agreement route. You can issue the advisory letters, which we've been over today. So I'll try from now on to kind of prompt you on, you know, the three different types of advisory letters and which grounds you're going under. You can issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education. The one caveat to that, even though they're non-disciplinary, you are ordering somebody to take a continuing education class, which generally will cost money, so it does affect property interest. So what we can do is you can go ahead and issue an order for that, but if the licensee wants to have a formal interview or petitions for rehearing, so basically it'll go out as a non-disciplinary order, but it has language that allows them to petition for rehearing. If at any time, you know, the licensee says, hey, I'd like a hearing on this, then my advice would be to give them that, because that way you're giving them due process. Some boards do it as a, you can order the non-disciplinary action and then they can ask for a hearing. You don't have to do it that way. But I just wanted you to know in case, you know, somebody appeals it and then you say, wait a minute, I thought these were non-disciplinary. That's not quite the case. You do have to give them some due process.
So they might do that in an instance where they didn't want to pay for all these CE hours that we're ordering them to take?
Because it is affecting their, it's different from an advisory letter, which doesn't really, it affects them in the sense that it's a public record, but it's not requiring them to spend any money or do anything. So that's the distinction on that.
Okay.
You can issue an interim order for an evaluation, and you know, we've talked about that before. It can be for a substance abuse evaluation. You can order someone to undergo a psychiatric evaluation, a neuropsychological evaluation, a psychosexual evaluation. There's a fitness for duty evaluation. There's a lot of different options that you have. And it's a good tool before you actually adjudicate the case because it'll give you information from, you know, an expert as to the person's ability to safely practice. And that's basically, you know, your end goal is this person safe to practice? And when you have a psychologist or addictionologist, somebody telling you that they are or they're not, or they are subject to, you know, different requirements, then it's just a good tool for the board because you're not kind of wondering what to do with the person. And then it gives you a good basis to move forward. So it's better to do if you're going to do an interim order, to do it as part of your investigation as opposed to ordering an evaluation as part of a final order, because then you have to kind of keep the case going. But if you issue it beforehand, then you'll have the information before you issue your final order. You can send it to a formal interview. You can send the case to formal hearing if you, based on the information you have in front of you, think suspension or revocation would be warranted in the case, so you can skip the formal interview, go right to the formal hearing. The problem with that is, you know, we just need to make sure that all the evidence is there, because technically what you're saying is based on what we have in front of us, you know, we think this person needs to either take a timeout or lose his or her license, but we have to be able to put the case on. So, and I'll, you know, let you know if it's probably not ready to go that route. You know, a lot of time I think you might consider doing that. I've seen when somebody's not cooperating, not responding, which is fine. And at some point during the process, if they surface, you know, we can always kind of back it up and come back to you.
Formal interview is where they are sworn under oath. Is that
formal interview and formal hearing? Yes. Right. And I'll get to the differences in those. At the initial review, you have the option to summarily suspend if you think, based on the information that's presented to you, this person is just a danger to the public right now. Again, we need evidence. If you do summarily suspend, that means we have to go to hearing in 30 days. So in order for me to proceed, I need to have all enough evidence to come back before you in a hearing. Summary suspensions are rare, but they can happen, and you do have that right. The initial review, because it's not a hearing, you know, it's kind of a fine balance between you've got the complainant and the licensee in front of you, and you should ask some questions so that it helps you make the decision on where to move the case, but you don't want it to become a hearing. So, and I can't give you a hard and fast rule on, you know, how many questions to ask or not ask, but if it gets to the point where you're spending a lot of time asking questions, it's probably a good clue that you need to go to a formal interview rather than spend the time right now just moving on. On page three, that's just a little more on consent agreements. I think we probably touched on them both, most of those. And when you offer a consent agreement, you can give the person a certain time to accept it. If they don't accept it, then part of your motion can be to move it to formal interview or formal hearing. And what that does, it eliminates it having to come back to you for staff to report to you to say they wouldn't sign it. And then you have to do another vote. So you can wrap it all in one, offer consent, not signed within X number of days, then we want to go to formal interview or formal hearing. So for the cases that you move to formal interviews, now I'm on page four, basically a formal interview, the point of it is to give the licensee some kind of due process before you discipline them. Because after a formal interview, you can then elevate your available options to include discipline. But there has to be some type of proceeding and opportunity for a hearing given to the licensee before you can do that. So it comes from the 14th Amendment. My other one's entitled to due process. On page five, so in due process, when you have people come for their initial review, that's not really a due process time, and I think I've seen a couple of attorneys try to argue, you know, during the initial review, my client, you know, wasn't aware of this, that, and the other thing. Due process doesn't really kick in until somebody is at risk of being disciplined. Because you can't discipline anybody at an initial review, they're really not entitled to the full-blown due process at that point, but attorneys will try to throw that out at you, but not really a right at that point. Licensees may not be penalized for exercising their due process rights. So again, like I said, somebody doesn't want to accept a consent agreement, but you know, that's within their rights. They don't have to do that. They can make this board go all the way to a formal hearing and appeals, and but that you can't ever take that away from anybody. So the difference between a formal interview and a formal hearing is if someone elects a formal interview, so you invite them, they get a document explaining what that entails. What a formal interview doesn't allow a licensee to do is cross-examine witnesses, bring in expert witnesses. If they want all of those, that process in a proceeding, then they need to elect to go to a formal which they're given that choice. And again, you can't penalize them for that. They may say, no, I want a lawyer, I want to bring in an expert, and then you elevate it to that next level. But it's their choice. They also have a choice, because I know this board doesn't use Office of Administrative Hearings, maybe once in a while, and I don't think it's very often. Lindsay, do you know? Not very often. There is a provision in what's called, there's a Bill of Rights in Title 41 of Arizona Revised Statutes. So if you say, okay, we're gonna have a formal hearing before the board, the respondent has a choice to say, I want it held at the Office of Administrative Hearing, which is in the basement. And what that gives them is just an administrative law judge that hears the case. It eventually comes back to the board for the final decision, but some people just like fact that their hearing's not in front of the board. They'd rather have an objective administrative law judge hear it. I haven't seen that happen with this agency. It actually doesn't happen all that often, but I just wanted you to be aware that that's something out there.
And that adjudication is, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, we might have that happen more now. And what I'm thinking about is if Dr. Knopf recuses himself with any cases related to the joint, mm-hmm. and then one of those patients come to me and they become my patient and they complain to me about one of their doctors, now we don't have a quorum if I have to recuse myself or I have to step back. And so would we then send that to another?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting question because you
yes, it is.
You can send it to the administrative law judge, but the administrative law judge doesn't make final decisions. So at some point, you're going to need a quorum to be able to act on that decision, even if it's to accept it in full. Hopefully, that's not going to happen too often. Because it can get, recently, appointments are taking a little longer than they used to, a lot of the smaller boards are running into that issue where they can't vote on applications because of board members having to recuse themselves, and it's really frustrating. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed that it doesn't happen. So I think you're just kicking the can down the road. If you do that, you can, it'll be fine for purposes of holding the hearing, but the case won't be able to have any finality until you get a quorum of the board that can act on it.
Okay. Did you have another question?
That was a very interesting question, yeah. Yes, I did. And it spoke to what you just said. And that is, once the administrative
law judge
comes to a conclusion, is that final? Is it not final? What happens?
It's just a recommendation. So the administrative law judge will come up with findings of fact based on the evidence that he or she hears, and then conclusions on law, which will be violations of your statutes, and then a recommended order whether the person should be revoked or suspended or placed on probation, et cetera.
And who makes that call?
Well, then it comes to you, so you'll get the recommendation, and then you as a board decide, do you want to accept that in full? Do you want to modify it a little bit? If the administrative law judge recommends probation, but you really think this person deserves a suspension, then that's within your right to change that. As long as you articulate why. So there always has to be a justification for anything you change in an administrative law judge decision.
So it's still going to end up back here?
It always will end up back with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
However, they will have done all the work for us, right?
Unless it changes. Hey. There is a lawsuit pending right now kind of challenging that process so that board shouldn't have the discretion to change an administrative law judge's decision. So I don't know. Who knows in the future if the legislature will change that and make decisions final. I don't know. I did want to point out, so under your process for if a case goes to formal interview, the complainant is allowed to address you as a licensee, obviously. So the complainants, the one thing to remember with that is it's fine to hear from them, but they're not a party, which is always hard for them to understand. They're really just kind of a witness for the state or a witness for the board, even though they bring the complainant, so they think that they're entitled to everything the respondent is. But, they shouldn't be seeing anything in your investigative file. They're really just here to get their side. They don't get to engage in, questioning the respondent. If it goes to formal hearing, a lot of times when we do formal hearings, we don't even call the complainant as a witness in our case. Sometimes we don't need them. And a lot of times it ends up making it a little messier than it needs to. So if we can put our case on through records, then we do that with either an expert witness or a staff member or something. So it helps. We try to tell them along the way that, you're a witness. They always get mad, but that's just the way it is. Like the medical board, they only allow the complainant to speak in a call to the public. They don't get to come up when the formal interview is called and speak. They have to just give their comments beforehand. Again, that's not saying you have to do that. It's just, so that's just the main thing on that. They're not parties. During a formal interview, because we say that the licensees don't have a right to cross-examine, you can't have a procedure if the respondent or his attorney wants to ask the complainant a question. They should be going through the chair. You know, could you ask the complainant? It's up to the chair then to say, well, you know, you go ahead and ask her directly, but everything should be going through there because you want to keep the formal interview a formal interview versus a formal hearing. Try not to blur those lines. When a licensee is invited to a formal interview, again, they can accept that and say, yes, I'll participate, or they can say, no, I don't want to participate. The main point out there is we have to make sure that they are fully informed of what they're getting if they come to a formal interview versus what they get for a formal hearing. So I think that's all explained when they get their invitation. And then, and I'll have to look at Dr. Green under script to make sure that's in there. I haven't done enough formal interviews with you, but it should say in there, you get them to articulate on the record that they acknowledge that this is a formal interview, not a formal hearing, and
okay.
They put it on the record, and then you can move forward. That way, but sometimes you have, after the fact, respondents will try to say, well, wait a minute, I didn't know I was given my chance to have a formal hearing, or they'll come to the formal interview, they'll participate, and then you get a letter saying, okay, now I want my formal hearing. And you're like, no, you don't get both. Unless the board feels it needs to go to formal hearing after the formal interview. So a little bit about the formal interview process. I'm on page 9. So the chair reads opening remarks, you get a summary of the case, why you're here. You give the licensee and the attorney the chance to give an opening statement, and then I added on, because I had neglected to type this in, but then you can hear from the complainant. I don't know that you necessarily do lead board members, but you know, if you don't have a lead board member, that kind of starts the questioning. You know, it's just whoever wants to start asking questions of the respondent. And the main point I always like to highlight on these, when you're doing a formal interview, and I'm not saying any of you have done this, but it's not an interrogation. A formal interview really is, it's fact-finding. You want the licensee to answer questions, but you don't want to cross-examine them. You don't want to scold them. You just treat them with respect, and you just ask a question and hopefully get the answer. If you don't, you can ask a question until you get the answer you want. Sometimes they don't like to answer questions directly. And I thought there was one today who said, please answer yes or no, and that's perfectly fine. Because, if they don't want to acknowledge the facts, they're going to try to talk about a lot of other stuff around it.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with getting them to answer your question. Once you get your answer, then move on. And then after you get the closing statements from the respondent, you can ask the complainant if they have any closing remarks. Then it moves into board deliberations. And at that point, the respondent, the complainant, need to be quiet, and then it's up to the board to come up with what kind of decision you want to make in the case. Our role, the assistant attorney's general role in the formal interviews, is we don't participate in the hearing process, but obviously if the board needs legal advice, then that's what we'll do. So we try to help you with the process, and then any questions on how, any statutory questions or procedural questions, then we help you with that, but we don't take a role in that. So after your formal interview is done, then you still have all of the non-disciplinary options available to you, or you can find unprofessional conduct and discipline. You have all your disciplinary sanctions available short of suspension or revocation. So if you can get done with your formal interview and you think, wow, this is really bad, we need to suspend or revoke, then you vote to go to a formal hearing, and then we come back to you at a later date.
What kinds of things would fall under cease and desist?
Yeah, and that's actually an interesting, you don't see that very often as a discipline. And it's probably not used very often. It's just basically a way to say stop doing what you're doing.
If we had an unlicensed chiropractor and we sent it to the Attorney General's office, then they would send a cease and desist.
Okay.
Yeah, and for unlicensed, under a new law that just passed last session, I mean, you have that authority to do that. But the way it's written in your statutes, it's almost like for a licensee, a cease and desist. So I don't know
if there were
something they do.
No.
Yeah, I don't think it's probably used that often. I found it interesting. That caught my eye because like a lot of boards don't have.
Kind of why I ask. I've never seen it.
They have it for unlicensed. Like Dr. Guarino said, hey, you're practicing without a license. Stop doing that. But usually for licensees, you take care of it through other mechanisms, not a cease and desist.
If there were a billing practice or something that was very specific, could that be identified by the board as saying, we want you to go get some record keeping and so forth, but specifically want you to stop doing this?
Yeah, I think you could. I think it's one of those case by case that, you know, if it comes up, we'll talk through it.
And you mentioned something during the board meeting about using ACA as a member when he's not.
Mm-hmm.
That would potentially stop doing that.
That's false advertising. No, I mean, I just want to, you know.
So I think there is a place for it. It was it just kind of caught my eye, cause just the way where it was in your statute. Let's see. Summary suspension, again, is always an option after a formal interview. If, you know, sometimes you get some interesting information from licensees in front of you that, you know, like, whoa, you know, if you're doing that, then we need to take you out of practice right now. If it's not, we always like to have, if you know in advance that somebody might warrant a summary suspension, we try to work it into the agenda. If it's not on the agenda, but you think there's an emergency, you know, we're not going to tell you you can't do it. It's because those magic words aren't on the agenda. You always have that option just in conjunction with the case. So it doesn't have to be, you don't have to come back at a separate meeting just to summarily suspend. But a lot of times we'll convene a board meeting for the specific purpose of the board considering whether to summarily suspend. If staff gets information there's somebody that's, you know, completely impaired and you need to get them off the street and not out of practice. So sometimes we know in advance and we'll put it on the agenda, but it doesn't have to be on there. All right. I think we've been through most of the non-disciplinary. On page 12, we've talked about all that. Your disciplinary sanctions, in addition to the cease and desist, you can do an order of censure under your statutes that may include restitution of fees, probation requirements. You can have a practice restriction, practice monitoring, record audits, retraining, competency assessment is, you know, for if it is a duty. Civil penalty up to $1,000 per violation, continuing education, and a letter of concern.
If there's a civil penalty, is that published as part of their the documentation of the disciplinary sanction?
Oh yes.
I'm not, because I don't recall, and it's not that I read these things, you know, as a hobby, but I don't recall having seen any kind of civil penalties being placed on people. Does it happen reasonably routinely?
It's happened probably 5 times in the last 6 or 7 years that I've seen.
It's not often.
Yeah.
It's more common for the board to request the restitution for the cost of the investigation, and that's different than a civil penalty. So the civil penalty is used, but not very often.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
But it would be in the order.
It would be in either of them.
Yeah, it would be disclosed if it happened.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And civil penalties go into the general fund, not the board's individual fund.
Okay.
Just in case you're wondering.
Yeah,
if you're trying to build
one. Kind of fleece, kind of feather our nest here a little bit, huh? Yeah.
All right, on page 15, so once you do a formal interview, then we have to generate an order from that. So part of that order has to have findings of fact. So staff on how you do it. Does the board order come back to the board to for final approval, or do they give you enough direction to draft it and send it out?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
After a formal interview,
mm-hmm.
when the board just makes its decision, so there has to be findings of fact, and then
mm-hmm.
the violations, and then the sanction,
yes.
does it come back to them, a draft order?
It does not.
Okay.
No.
So because you don't get it back, it's important that you're very specific on what you want your findings of fact to be and your violations, because otherwise staff doesn't know what to put in there.
And so the way that plays out is if we have six allegations and they put together supporting evidence for allegation one that could be A, B, C, D, and E, then you, when you're making your motion, will have to say, allegation number one, findings of fact, letters A, C, and E apply, but I don't think B does, and then the same thing
exactly.
with the law statutes when it comes to that point as well.
So you have, they'll give you a guide in the board brief, but you need to articulate what you found, what you're accepting, and maybe something that you don't think was proven or whatever, and you know, again, we'll help you through it, but that's an integral part of an order.
If for some reason the board does not go through the findings of facts and conclusions of law and they direct staff to draft that consent agreement, then we would bring it back for approval, or the board could designate one member to review it before it's offered.
Okay.
All right. Then once you issue your order, the licensee, the respondent, has a chance to file a petition for rehearing with you saying, here's why I think you're wrong. There's seven different grounds they can say that the board did wrong in this case. And then the board has to decide either you deny the motion for rehearing or you say, yeah, you know what, maybe the penalty's a little excessive, or you know, you agree with the respondent, and then you have two options. You can either give them an entirely new hearing, a new formal interview, or you can fix it when you're considering the petition for rehearing. So let's say you order, you know, 20 hours of CE, and the licensee is like, well, you know, I think that's kind of a lot. You could say, okay, we'll knock it down to 10. So certain things you can fix. If somebody was just completely denied, you know, let's say due process along the way, you probably just want to give them a do-over of the whole process. That doesn't happen very often, but it could.
How often does it occur where somebody uses this kind of like, okay, let's, you know, once they're sanctioned with a, let's take the 20-hour, sounds like, you know, some people would say, well, how about 10? You know, I mean, how often do they use this at a level to negotiate? Is it
not too much on that. But the thing with a petition for rehearing, if there's any chance that the respondent wants to take your order and put it before a judge, they have to file a petition for rehearing. If they don't file a petition for rehearing, they don't get to go to court. So some people do it probably knowing full well that the board's going to deny it.
Could the board say, you know what, we think it should be 30.
No.
Okay, I mean, we just want to discourage negotiation.
I have
here.
That question a lot. What if I want to up it?
There, I can tell you from our FCLB meetings and with the NBCE, there are some states that the governor will just clean house and they will get rid of the whole board and put a whole new freshman board on. And so if you felt like you got a bad shake in those circumstances, you might want a rehearing with the new board. So, but that doesn't
good
happen
point.
Here.
Wow.
Yeah. The one thing on the petitions for rehearing, I will read them, and if I think that there's a problem, I will let you know that, because we don't want it to go to court if there was some kind of error made at this level. So you can kind of take your cue. If it's just somebody saying, you know, I think the penalty's excessive, that's kind of your call, but if there's someone who says, I didn't get a fair hearing, or applied the statute wrong or whatever, so you can kind of take your cue from I'll give you legal advice and say, yeah, you probably want to grant this because there's some problems with it. The majority appeals do you then? Yeah, it kind of depends. Medical board gets a lot. Dental board gets a lot. There's some boards that just don't get very many of them. But what the process is the court, there's one judge that does all of these. And he gets your entire record. So he gets your investigation, he gets any transcript, he gets your board order, and then we file briefs. So I defend your decision, and the respondent tries to convince the judge you guys were wrong. And then, so it's not a trial. We don't go in there and do a trial. It's a pretty easy process. And if the judge doesn't agree with the board's decision, the judge can reverse it and vacate it, or a lot of times they'll just remand it back to you to fix it. Probably the majority of them, not all, would get affirmed and your order stands. Then they can still go to Court of Appeals and Supreme Court, the Arizona Supreme Court. But that doesn't happen very often either. All right, any questions on this part of it?
No, that was helpful.
Very, thank you.
Yes, very helpful.
And then we'll do part two next time.
Well, I'm glad they wanted this one because next meeting will be a couple of formal hearings and several interviews.
Oh, there was, I forgot to talk about the one thing you wanted me to talk about. So the initial review, so going back, like with Dr. Mahan here, whatever, the one where you want staff to get more information. So it's helpful if, when you're doing the initial review, if you think you want, you know, you want to expand your investigation a little bit, and that's perfectly fine. You don't want to go on a fishing expedition, but, you know, getting more records or opening it up to other patients, that's perfectly acceptable. But to the extent you can identify the missing information during the initial review rather than behind the scenes, that just helps. It's just more transparent and it looks better. If you miss something and you want to contact Martin, that's fine. But we try not to have individual board members directing an investigation. So there's nothing wrong with raising it at an initial review and saying, hey, I'd like to see, you know, the billing records, the EOBs, the compliance manual, whatever.
So do that in a meeting rather than calling before the meeting to Martin saying, you know, we got all the records, but I didn't see the billing records. Can we get those before the meeting? Shouldn't do that.
Right.
Well, there wouldn't be enough time anyway because by the time we get the meeting materials on Thursday, they need time to respond if they're going to need to submit more information.
You know, and sometimes you'll get the respondent might just be very cooperative and say, oh, you know, fine, I'll just send those in and you may not even have to do a subpoena.
And I'm on the lookout now because that there are a couple of templates we have where billing records was not included in that template.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So we're going to move that and
cool.
Billing including payment. Right.
Yes.
I've certainly seen that a couple of times already, so.
Okay, cool. That's great.
Just a little parenthetical, I guess, in this opinion, you could say billing includes payments.
Yeah, I know, I've seen them, yeah. All patient records, including everything, radiographs, billing, ledgers, all that.
You would think the statement all records would mean something, but it really doesn't.
Well, and the more specific you get in the subpoena, they can't argue, well, I didn't know you wanted that. Like it says right here.
Okay. Is there a final motion to adjourn?
Make the motion to adjourn.
Second.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. 12:36.